Today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Since 1998, Stamps.com has been an indispensable tool for nearly 1 million businesses. Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS shipping right to your computer. Whether you're in office sending invoices, a side hustle Etsy business, or a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com will make your life easier. All you need is a computer and a standard printer. No special supplies or equipment, and within minutes, you're up and running, printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send it. Save time and money with Stamps.com. There's no risk, and with our promo code POD, P-O-D, you get a special offer that includes a four-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in POD, P-O-D. And now, off to the episode.
We've been waiting for this all season long. The finale, the title decider, under the lights here in Abu Dhabi. It's lights out, away we go, and Hamilton gets a decent start, and he's already ahead of Max Verstappen. There's a bit of jockeying going on between Tsunoda and Ricciardo. Hamilton leads into the first corner. Norris goes wide. Sergio Perez slips through into third place. There comes Carlos Sainz, but it's Hamilton out in front. The medium tyres working well for him as his teammate Valtteri Bottas challenges the Ferrari. Into the hairpin we go now. Hamilton leads Bottas, leads Perez, then leads Norris, then the two Ferraris as Sainz and Leclerc. It is a dream start for Lewis Hamilton.
Yes, the only good news there for Red Bull is at least Perez is up there, but for the second consecutive weekend, the Red Bull did not get off the line very well.
There's three abreast going into the turn nine hairpin. Oh, and there, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton almost coming together. Hamilton has to go off the track. The Dutch fans roaring in the background. In the background, Lewis Hamilton in the lead, but will he have to give out the place?
Yes, he can take back.
No investigation necessary, say the stewards. Max Verstappen about to make what should be his one and only pit stop of this race. So Sergio Perez will stay out and will go on to take the lead of this race. Neat stop by the Mercedes crew.
Okay, we'll be looking to hold on, Lewis. I think Perez best to do that.
Lewis will be nervous at the back of the Red Bull, and Perez will have a lunge up the inside. Inevitably, Lewis cuts back underneath him, and that's exactly what we expected to happen. He went out, drive past him, give him a cheery little wave, and that was about all Perez could do, or was it? Perez with DRS is coming back into turn nine.
Can Perez make it into turn nine? He saved up a bit of energy from that battery store, and with a bit of DRS possibly as well, has blasted past Lewis Hamilton, so he is going to hold him up just that little extra bit. This is a very, very good tussle here. Perez is absolutely on the limit and as fair as he can be.
Okay, back him up, back him up.
As they make their way around the final two turns, Hamilton's going to try and get Perez into turn one and have to go the long way around the outside to do it and can't quite do it. Perez playing the ultimate team game here for Max Verstappen, and this is really frustrating Lewis Hamilton. It's going to be hurting his tyres a little bit as well. Perez and Hamilton in the 134s and the 133s. The gap now coming down between Verstappen and Hamilton. You can see him right in the background. Hamilton needs to get past Perez here. He does get past Perez. He moves towards the inside. He's going to force Perez the long way round if Perez is going to try and retake that lead of the race. But on lap 21, Hamilton does get past Perez, but Perez has played the ultimate team game and he's really brought his teammate back into play.
And he can give his teammate a bit of DRS for good measure. So great team play. That's the team play we talked about earlier on. Now he gets clean out of the way.
Oh, Checo is a legend.
Absolute animal.
Oh no, Nicholas Latifi has crashed, and I think that is at turn 14. That will be a safety car. And coming into the pits, Max Verstappen. Hamilton stays out. Verstappen coming into the pits, and I would imagine there's a set of soft tyres waiting for him to go onto that Red Bull car. Yes, it is. And lapped cars will not be allowed to overtake.
It's not mandatory in the regulations, which leaves Verstappen with a lot of work to do then.
Lap cars will not be allowed to overtake.
Yeah, of course. Typical decision.
It's classic.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
This is the safety car coming in this lap. We think it should do, could do.
Lapped cars to overtake the safety car.
So Norris and Alonso and Ocon and Leclerc and Vettel to
and
overtake
it's ending.
It.
And it's ending. Wow.
So there's confusion, but the safety car is coming in at the end of this lap. So those back markers allowed to overtake the safety car.
Michael, this isn't right.
It has left Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen side by side. Hamilton will be ahead. Verstappen is absolutely desperate to get on with this on that soft compound tyre. We're going to have one lap of racing to decide the championship in 2021. Hamilton has the advantage. Verstappen has the faster, fresher tyres. And we have got 3.2 miles of racing action all the way to the checkered flag as the crowd roar the drivers on to the final lap of this race, and Verstappen sets after Hamilton. Is it going to be a first world championship for Verstappen? Is it going to be an eighth world championship for Lewis Hamilton? Where can Verstappen try and get past Hamilton? First overtaking zone is normally down into turn five. Is Verstappen far enough back? He's going to make the lunge down the inside. Hamilton sees it coming. It's a late lunge by Verstappen, who takes the lead of the race. Verstappen now snatches the championship trophy from Lewis Hamilton, who's trying to fight back.
No DRS for two laps, so Lewis Hamilton will not get the rear wing open. He's going to go down the outside. If Verstappen keeps it tight, you need, but he hasn't. He's gone a little bit wide.
This race that started with controversy has ended with controversy.
No, Mikey, no.
Hamilton, though, down the back straight. He's got a slipstream. He almost touches Verstappen. They almost make contact into turn nine. Verstappen stays ahead of Lewis Hamilton. Of all the drama, of all the controversy, of all the magic moments in Formula One in 2021, it comes down to this. And at this moment, it looks like it's going to go the way of Max Verstappen. Mercedes not happy. Red Bull will be delighted. They have shared a brilliant championship battle, but the championship can only be won by one, and it's going Dutch in 2021. Max Verstappen, for the first time ever, is champion of the world. Lewis Hamilton finishes in second place after leading for so long.
This is the Outlap F1 Podcast, featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 57 of the Outlap F1 Podcast, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix Race Review season ending. Holy crap, it's finally over. I am your host, James, along with my wonderful host, John and Andy, soon to be joined by Deanna, and with special guest Vincenzo Landino. Before we get to Vincenzo, John, I've been waiting to talk to you all day. I'm glad to see you're okay. I'm going to leave that.
I'm doing all right,
man. Still breathing over there?
I'm doing all right. Andy checked on me immediately after the race. I appreciate that, buddy. And I watched the race with my neighbor, so he kept me cool, calm, and collected throughout. But as I was joking with you guys before before recording tonight, I've been mentally preparing myself for some kind of shenanigans, stupidity since Saudi Arabia. And I honestly thought it was going to involve Max Verstappen and Red Bull somehow, some way. I should have, I'm not sure why I did not, but I should have known that there would be an FIA Michael Massey component to that stupidity. But I'm fine. You know, my boy ran a hell of a good race, which we'll talk about later. And I can be proud of that. And you know what? There's a lot of things that could have been said after this race by my boy. And like always, class act. So I can be all right with that. So I'm good.
My wife actually asked me if I had done a wellness check on you at all in the morning. I was like, I'm just going to let him stew in it, and I'll talk to him later. Andy, your boy Lando.
He texted.
Go ahead.
No, James texted me to make sure I was checking on you.
So I appreciate
there
it.
Was some concern in there at some point today.
I'd like to see
it's
the text message.
About 4 hours
please.
After I checked in.
Not
on
that
you,
much.
But it was there.
Andy, your boy Lando Norris.
Even your brother checked on me, yeah, James. So
well, I knew you'd be all right. Andy.
I know who the better
your boy Andy Lando Norris sandwiching between the Ferraris. How was your final Sunday of the 2021 season?
overall a little frustrating. We will definitely get into different reasons as to why. It was intense because I was trying to do the live tweet on our show account this morning, trying to give the blow-by-blow of everything that was going on. So I wasn't exactly – I wasn't in my normal, like, watching a race type of thing. So I actually ended up having to watch it a second time to actually try to process it all. And I'm still pretty much in the same mindset as I was at the end of it. I'm still confused. I have no idea which end is up at this point. But we have a result. We have a victor. We have somebody who's going to touch a trophy on Thursday. Or do we?
Yes. And now I want to introduce somebody very special, special guest on tonight's episode, and that is Vincenzo Landino. Sir, how you doing? Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
I'm doing great. I feel so left out of the banter right now, but I appreciate you guys for having me. I write a newsletter about F1 and the kind of culture and business behind F1. That is my kind of moonlighting thing right now, but I have a creative studio that I run, and yeah, that's my day to day. That's what kind of pays the bills. I love F1, been watching since I was a little kid. This season's been absolutely bonkers across the board. One of the absolute top five craziest seasons ever. So I'm glad I'm here to chat about it. I'm actually really glad I get to talk about this specific race. It's kind of fun that it's like the not even penultimate. It's the ultimate finale. Yeah, I know we'll get into it later, so I won't say anything else.
And based on your name, I know you're a diehard Mercedes fan. So.
Oh yeah, I love Mercedes. I do. I mean, I'm not a fan of the team, but they make great cars. I mean, I love the AMG. So
yeah, where are you originally from?
Connecticut. Grew up in Connecticut, New Haven, best pizza in the world.
Blasphemy.
That's not best pizza in the world. Best pizza outside of Naples, Italy, and where my parents are from. So yeah. Connecticut, grew up there, and now I'm in South Florida. Yeah, nice. I advertise early. Not really.
All right, so before we start talking about the actual nuts and bolts of the race, I got to remind everybody where to find us on social media: Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and YouTube at the Outlap F1 or at Outlap F1 Podcast. Sorry, you can check out our link tree on our Twitter profile, of course. And if you are watching this video, one, you're going to see a second prancing horse for the second time ever. Thank you for that, Vincenzo. And two, do us a favor: click and like, subscribe on YouTube, or click that 5-star button if you're on Apple Podcasts. Really appreciate it. Help us grow the show. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. You can visit our wonderful website at www.outlapf1.com, where you'll find old episodes such as F1 for Beginners. The 2022 version will be here before you know it. I'm sure there was a lot of new fans today that watched this race, and man, you got a little bit of everything. You got just the entirety of the 2021 season just condensed into one race, just the craziness. Please don't expect them all to be like that. Hopefully this is the start of something special, and it's just like a decade long of just crazy F1. We'll stick with that. The Outlap F1 Nation continues to step up. Thank you so much to all of our donators out there. You got Kevin Kelly, Reagan Stanzak, Richard Cole, Travis Colby, Timothy Brown, Hillary LaRose, Mary Brown, and Matt Polanski from the Red Sector MotoGP podcast. If you would like to sign up and help support the show, you can find that link in our episode description. And also, you can check out Manscaped to get 20% off and free shipping by using code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP. I swear, every episode that part gets longer and longer, but somehow I make it through. Now we can move on to our headlines of the day. Andy, I'm going to start with you.
Well, what I thought I was going into this race was I was going to give the definition of the word crucible. And this race was meant to be a crucible. And in it, we burn away irrelevancies until we reach the truth for all time. Until we didn't. Thud.
You're so damn deep, Andy.
John, what do you got?
I'm the oldest guy here. I got to contribute something.
That's true.
John, what do you got for your headline?
You know, I had this conversation with Vincenzo earlier this week on Twitter space, but I think we got our answer. Unfortunately, today was the day that entertainment valued more than sport. Unfortunately, so F1 took a little bit of the NASCAR page today, unfortunately, and I hope there's lessons learned, because we've seen how, you know, the push for entertainment has worked out for our NASCAR brethren here, so in the States. So
Well, that was depressing. Thanks, John. For my headline of the day.
Doing my role here, buddy. I can't be all happy. I mean, come on now. I got to do something.
For my headline, I'm ready to close out 2021, as great as it was. I'm ready to move on and start looking towards 2022. And I did that by watching Deanna's way too early season predictions. But I think she nailed them. Ferrari and Charles Leclerc, champions. I can't wait. Vincenzo, what do you got for your headline of the day?
Kind of also depressing, but this is my first season watching F1 and most definitely my last. I heard that numerous times today, so it's pretty sad that, I mean, I got multiple Yikes. Text messages and DMs and tweets that said that, and I'm like, this is really bad for the sport. When what John said, well, spectacle takes precedent over actual racing.
Guess what? I don't.
Oh, I don't either. It's like people saying they were going to move out of Canada.
On March
20th
next year, everybody will who was watching today will probably be watching.
100%.
The DTS will come out. It'll set records. Yeah.
Oh my god,
no doubt.
So, do you think, speaking of that, Drive to Survive next season is going to win an Emmy in whatever the hell category it's in? Do they give one to Michael Massey or what?
You should definitely get an honorary honorary award.
Yeah. Get like writer slash director award for that because
producer executive
like to
producer
thank my family Toto Wolff, Christian Horner, and anybody else who pushes that magic FIA radio button for this prestigious award.
I've got Yikes. Thoughts on that FIA radio. Right.
I'm not sure
way.
If you're happy right now because
I've got thoughts on that FIA radio for the record, but I'll keep them to
well,
myself.
Yeah, we will get to all that, but before we can, we do have one more thing to go through, and that is Andy's final qualifying recap of the year. Take it away, sir.
It feels like 3 years ago, but we actually did have a qualifying session yesterday. And going out in that session in P20, as normal, was Nikita Mazepin. P19 was Mick Schumacher. P18 was Kimi Räikkönen. P17 was George Russell. And in P16 was Nicholas Latifi. Advancing to Q2, but going no farther in P15 was Sebastian Vettel. P14, Antonio Giovinazzi. P13, Lance Stroll. P12, Pierre Gasly. P11, Fernando Alonso. The top 10 from 10 to 1 in P10 was Daniel Ricciardo. P9, Esteban Ocon. P8, Yuki Tsunoda. P7, Charles Leclerc. P6, Valtteri Bottas. There's a bit of foreshadowing there. P5, Carlos Sainz. P4, Sergio Checo Perez. And he ended up doing what we said he had to do. P3, Lando Norris. That was a bit of a surprise, but a good one for me. P2 was Lewis Hamilton, and in P1 with an absolute flyer, a 122.109, we find Max Verstappen.
So what did you guys think of the lack of response from Mercedes, given that they had 5.5-ish minutes after Red Bull did the tow for both drivers, which is pretty strategic? What did you think of the lack of response there?
I basically thought it was a blinder and a hell of a call by Red Bull. Mercedes did not want to respond in kind. They could have, but I guess they didn't. They probably didn't think they needed to. Well, I guess they did because I think it ended up being like 0.3 in it at the end of the day. So that was a bit of a fumble by Mercedes. I think there's no really other way to see it.
I was going to say hindsight is a lot different than, you know, that, you know, on Saturday we're like, why didn't they go for it? Why didn't they give it their all, take P1? Watching back the race, maybe a little bit different story. I wonder if they wanted that second position rather than taking first. I don't know. Like, is that a actual thought process in their strategy? But yeah, they were 0.3, right? Actually almost 0.4 of a second off. It was like 0.37, I think it was. So, I mean, they were pretty far back. I think they had a lot left. But Mercedes always plays mind games like that too. So you just never know. I mean, you know, they have it available to them. They're always going to be there, at least in this era of hybrids. Yeah. So I no thoughts there. Just felt like it was probably strategic.
It's funny you said that, because I actually wondered the same thing. Yeah, the fact that they had more than enough time to put that together was a little surprising. And then the fact that they didn't, and then the comments from Lewis after that, you know, he jokingly said, well, I'm glad I can at least see where he's at. made me think, okay, perhaps they would rather be, you know, the trailing car going into a very, very short and tight turn one. I mean, it obviously, it worked out as far as, you know, 98% of this race worked out just perfectly for them. So, yeah, it almost made me wonder, like, why the lack of response. They didn't even bother with a tow. Even the second run, Lewis came out ahead of Bottas, so they weren't even setting up for it, didn't even attempt it. So I know Lewis hasn't been a huge fan of the tow in prior years at different tracks. I know, you know, if you mess it up, you royally mess it up. You got to nail it perfectly, which Red Bull did on both occasions for both drivers. So, but yeah, I kind of wondered the same thing. Kind of look at the big picture.
I feel like it was easy to get that sense of maybe Mercedes wanted to be in second. For like you said, his comment about being able to see Max at the start then. They knew that Red Bull was going to be on the soft, so I think they knew it was a matter of time that they'd catch them if they didn't get him at the start like he did. So they were definitely comfortable with P2, I think, coming into this. I'm sure the only thing they weren't comfortable with was Bottas being at P6. So one last time, he could kind of throw in a wrench in Mercedes' strategy while on the team. But yeah, any other notes, anything stick out to you from qualifying before we move into the lights out in the race?
Well, I mean, the P3, 4, and 5 was ridiculously close. Mm-hmm. I think they were all in the same tenth of a second. I mean, you're talking about hundredths of a second in it. So it just goes to show that battle, you know, it doesn't – maybe the point totals don't equal it, but at least on relative pace at the end of the year, each of those cars dead on it in terms of nothing in it in terms of relative pace. So I thought that was interesting.
I was a little surprised that – Vettel and Alonso didn't make it to Q3. I thought for whatever reason they would. That was probably the only thing. Vettel's 15 really shocked me. I thought he had more. Wasn't there, but again, a driver and a team, it really didn't make a difference.
Yeah. Speaking of Vettel and where he finishes things, John, I was able to crack the bottle of bourbon you so graciously bought for me. It was pretty tasty, not gonna lie. I really enjoyed it.
All right, well, I appreciate it. Lesson learned. Like I said on Twitter, James has expensive taste. If you're betting against him, be aware of that. And also, don't make F1 related bets before preseason testing, because damn you, Aston Martin.
Well, we'll think of another one for next year, I'm sure.
Your shitty rake.
The nose was definitely like very oaky, leathery. But the palate,
I wanted you to describe it.
The palate was all free, baby, and that was really good. So I really enjoyed that part. So, right, so it's good.
We had a lovely little whale before preseason bet of Vettel versus Leclerc, and I blindly thought that Aston Martin would maybe have a decent car given 2020 pace and Mercedes motors and everything else. You know, then the whole rake issue happened and everything else that came with it. So, yeah, it was a painful lesson learned. Expensive bottle of bourbon later and a lot of shit for many months. About 9 months now, right? About right? Yeah. It's been over for about 8 months, I feel like. But I've been holding on to the faith as long as I could.
Yes, I definitely enjoyed every opportunity I had with that. All right, so let's go ahead and move into the race now with lights out. And we're going to start with the back markers. We're going to kind of fly through these and then get to the parts of the race that truly matter that we all want to get into. So here we had Mazepin not even starting. That definitely threw me for a loop this morning. Woke up about 6:45, definitely slept through my alarms after drinking a lot of that bourbon last night. So when I turned on the telecast, I'm like, it feels like we're missing somebody at the end there. So that's different. And then probably the most disappointing finish of the season, Kimi Raikkonen, not even finishing his final race. So maybe some overarching thoughts real quick. I'll start with you, Andy, on Raikkonen's finale here.
Half mechanical, half he lost it and he slides into the wall. I mean, at least he was able to get the car back so he doesn't end out on track. But just a very long and distinguished career comes to a rather kind of unfortunate end. You know, it was nice to see a lot of the tributes that Alfa Romeo had about on the garage and over the course of the weekend. He did not look very much on the pace or really anything, you know, super significant. But, it's 20-plus year career ultimately comes to the end of the day. It's probably time. And I think he's going to go and enjoy his life and enjoy his children. And I wish him all the best. And One day I hope he comes back and he's a pundit for at least 5 minutes, just so we can hear that tone of voice one more time.
And then
is this not like just, I was just saying, is this not the most like Kimi Raikkonen way to go out, though? I mean, he just, even in the interview that he did this week, it was just so nonchalant and no emotion, just classic Kimi. And, you know, even said his wife would be far more emotional than he would about it. And, yeah, it's just like, all right, see you guys. I was kind of hoping, like, maybe, you know, didn't know there was going to be all this stupidity post-race and everything, but I was kind of hoping maybe somehow, some way, they just shove him back out there and do a little donut, you know, one last time and bring it back in at post-race, but it's unfortunate. But, yeah, it's a classic Kimi. I'm sure he was sitting out on the yacht somewhere drinking a cold one, watching all the shenanigans happen, so classic Kimi.
And then, John, we had George Russell not able to finish his final race at Williams before moving to your club, Mercedes. And some pretty fiery tweets, I'd say. So what do you think of his final race with Williams? Were you disappointed that he wasn't able to finish?
Hold up. We're at full strength.
Oh.
Hi. How's it going?
She has arrived.
We made it. I'm sorry I'm a little late.
It's all right.
She got held up by the paparazzi, I think.
Yeah.
Deanna, I shamelessly plugged your way too early season predictions and talked about how much I love them, so you missed that.
All right.
The problem is, Deanna, he actually spoiled the ending, so if no one watches your video now, it's 100% James's fault.
Now I, like, when I recorded those, Leclerc was ahead of Sainz in the standings, and now half the comments are like, Sainz is going to win because he beat Leclerc this season and all this stuff. I'm like, oh, dang it. I mean, they're all going to be wrong anyway, so it was just kind of...
You heard that, James. Kind of, all going to be wrong.
Yeah, sorry.
Even
your top three is pretty
interesting too. So, yeah. Even though James spoiled it, I definitely highly recommend you go check it out. It's a comical short video. Whether it's true for or not, we'll find out in 12 months. But
it won't be. Almost guarantee it.
Can't be any worse than half the predictions I have this year. So it's fine.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right, boops.
Hey, I did pick Lance Stroll to get.
You're all doing better than me
time,
in the final tally, so I got nothing.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Don't look. All right, so moving on to another backmarker, Giovinazzi, Vincenzo. This is his last race in Formula One as we know it. Any lasting notes of Giovinazzi's short F1 career?
No. I mean, I wish the kid. I wish he was in a better car to really truly judge his, you know, how capable he is as a driver. I think he'll have a great time in Formula E. I think he'll do well there. He's just one of those guys that he's fast, but he could never really put it all together. And it, you know, being fast is part of the battle, but there's a lot of other things you have to do in Formula One well. And unfortunately, I don't think he was able to put it together. Yeah. Only Italian, though, in Formula One, and now there will no longer be an Italian in Formula One, so that kind of sucks for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't really look like there's anybody.
No,
really
there are none. I'm trying to think of anybody, and I don't think there is. Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate.
Probably a better chance to see an American before an Italian than right now, which is
I think the sport needs an American. I mean, you have the brand, the Italian brand that is bigger than the sport. I still truly believe that in Ferrari. But yeah, I think you need an American and you need a driver if you want to get the American audience, especially with the way they're pushing for it.
Yeah. It's the last, I mean, the old saying was, I think Mario Andretti used to say you had to have a home track, you had to have a home team, and you got to have a home driver. We've got two out of the three. We have two of one.
That would be a big difference.
If you count one of the three, really.
Yeah. Well, right. All right. Well, and apparently Gene Haas has been photoshopped in.
Yeah,
and,
that was,
you know, into the team photo and all of that fun. So, way to go, Haas. I do love the fact that they leaned in with the Godzilla picture. You know, kudos to that admin who's had probably way too hard of a job this season.
That kid needs to get a raise this year because
he's
just got nothing but hate. 12 straight months for no reason for his own self, but he's just like, oh,
I got
God.
A job.
Just, no.
Yeah, you got the worst job.
You got the worst job in the world, bro. I hope it's at least a paid internship.
To finish up the back markers, we got Latifi in 16th, Perez in 15th, Schumacher in 14th, Stroll in 13th. Obviously, Latifi and Checo Perez play huge roles in this race, but we'll get to them in just a little bit when we start talking about the podium finishers. So we'll go ahead and move right into the midfield. Andy, I'll hand that off to you first. Tell us a little bit about Danny Ric and Lando Norris's days.
For Ricardo, I would say he was at, like, we're going to talk huge implications about the championship 2 and what the lap 57 thing did. But Daniel Ricciardo can feel really just as ticked off about it as anybody, I would say, if he really wants to be, because he was the one who wasn't allowed back onto the lead lap after coming in under the safety car. So, I mean, you know, he's got the set of soft tires. He was looking to try to get some good points, maybe pull on, you know, some Baku late moves. And no, denied. Congratulations. You're a lap down. No love for you at the end. For Lando Norris, another unfortunate puncture. We talked about the curbing. It proved to probably be too much for his left front tire yet again. The team did call him in. He was sitting, I think, in P5 at the time. So he finishes P7, which isn't bad. I was very impressed with his qualifying effort to put the McLaren up to third. He's had himself a great year. We will talk much more in depth about Lando and his year and what I think it's going to be. But he ends up effectively 50 seconds behind P6, even though he was allowed to unlap himself, but it didn't really matter.
And was there any more on the gearbox issue? That seemed to...
That was something that the team was managing early. They told him, do some toggling of the gears. And then it basically kind of went away. The race engineer kind of calmed down, and there really wasn't a whole lot of dialogue about it. So that seemed to be okay. The issue was the puncture. Because all of a sudden, his race engineer comes on and says 100% pace. And that's usually the call of, we're going to pit you. And then the race engineer says, and we'll talk about it in a minute. And that's when I looked over and went, uh-oh. That can't be good. I don't know what it is, but that's not normal. That's not normal speak. So, it turned out it was the puncture. And I think he came out in P9. He did rally to get back to P7, but that was as good as he was going to do because he was 50 seconds behind P6.
Good job. So Vettel finished behind Charles Leclerc, as he tends to do. But he did win an award. Might not matter, but why don't you tell us about it?
Hey. Yeah. You know, the first ever, the inaugural champion of the crypto.com most ever take award. So we've made a comical joke about this throughout the entire season. Even Alonso, you know, made a comment like, maybe I should start from pit lane or something like that. Just yeah. To, you know, I'm glad that they see the humor in this ridiculous award. And I'm still not sure. I mean, of all the things to sponsor, like this, like we couldn't find something else for slapcrypto.com on, you know, but. You know, it is something. It's it's the first time that he's won a trophy in a while now. So
it is something. You are.
I'm curious if he'll add it to the to the collection or not, or if it'll go straight to something.
All right.
It kind of reminds me of like the old the NFL Turkey Bowl games where they would give, you know, the metal turkey the MVP of it, and then they just toss it in the trash can. And you almost wonder did that'll do something.
They used
similar.
It was
like
the 5-legged turkeys. Remember today. Those?
Right.
Those things are massive.
Is that the turducken or something like that?
Turduckens.
Yes. John Madden loved the turducken.
We've officially lost Ian again.
Sorry.
All right, Vincenzo.
I don't even know what comparison you can make for college basketball for a turducken. I don't even know. Like it's so far out of the realm.
With a duck
chicken
and a chicken
stuffed inside
in the
of it.
Of it. It's a crazy concoction.
It's like a chicken stuffed inside of a duck stuffed inside
and
of a turkey.
Bad.
That yeah. sounds horrible. Okay. Interesting.
Try it.
I've never had one.
It's okay.
Okay.
Vincenzo, so Charles Leclerc, my boy.
My boy.
Finishing in 10th, starting in 7th. Tell me about his day. What'd you think?
Another just ho-hum day. But, you know, I thought he was pushing. He was fighting at the top. There was not only the obvious, you know, that runoff when Max kind of came out. I didn't watch the replay, so I don't know exactly what happened, but it looked like he either was like paying attention to Max and he just ran wide, but it was really wide. It was as if like he didn't even realize the corner was there. And he just,
it was a major jink.
And
he's thankful for all the runoff.
Because
it's a classic, like, tank slapper
moment. I didn't think that was the moment though, that he lost position, a big position. I thought it was the pit strategy, which, again, looking back, was it the right call? Was it, you know, under the safety car? Why not pit? So I thought it was a good idea in theory. Maybe they go out there, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, he did get screwed in not being able to, or he did get, he was able to unlap himself, correct? I think he was one of the cars that did.
I think he was the last
yeah.
one.
Yeah, yeah. So he, I don't know. I'm frustrated with him losing that damn P5 to Lando. I'm glad Sainz got it, but it aggravates me that Lando got in front of him. Sorry, Andy.
Yeah, at first I thought maybe he was trying to take a page out of Lewis's book and just cut a corner and get like a huge advantage from it and be okay. But that wasn't it. I think it was just some weird coincidence with Max. But yeah, overall, his day definitely disappointing. I agree with you. He kind of got screwed on the pit strategy there. But to drop all the way down to seventh sucked. As soon as I saw he was out of the running for fifth, and I was really rooting on Sainz to get ahead of Lando, which did obviously happen. But tough to see him finish in seventh. But honestly, he's at Ferrari. He's not racing for fifth place. He's racing for first place, just like Deanna thinks he's going to do next year. So we'll see what happens in 2022. I'm looking forward to it. And I'll pull the page on today's
after
race.
After the day that I've had today, I'm glad that at least James is here to make me laugh. I appreciate it. I need it for some therapy. And come January, I'm going to be really pissed off about something.
I'm already convinced I'm going to have a new sound effect in the board next year, and that's just going to be air going out of the hype train that is Charles Leclerc.
I think that's a diss at both of us, James.
You can't
stop
me. The old
man talking shit over there.
What is McLaren going to do without the Mercedes?
But I can hope to continue.
What is McLaren going to do without the almighty Mercedes hybrid?
Well, they're going to continue with
it. Yeah, but it's not going to be – everything's not going to be the same next year. So what are they going to do?
Oh, I still think Mercedes is going to put – I still think it's the probably still the best, most reliable engine going.
You realistically think they come out with still the best engine next year? They start the year with the best engine?
I mean, it's mostly carried over.
They haven't developed, anything.
There's not going to be – it's frozen. There's not going to be – you pretty much know where you are now.
We'll see. I still think Ferrari. I think Ferrari's going to be. I agree with Deanna's prediction, even though I didn't watch the video.
I mean, if you're so.
Part of my Ferrari kind of explanation behind this, I think, to go from how horrendously bad they were in 2020, to like the leaps that they've made, especially in the back half of the season, and it really like they focused a lot this year on improving that power unit, which they 100% did. And I think next year when they're kind of move on from that and then focus on the aero side, potentially they can put it all together. And I mean, this is, everybody's laughing at me for predicting Ferrari, but I mean, this is one of the most successful teams of all time. Eventually they're going to get back there. So it might be 2022. It might be like 2032, 42.
Whoa, slow down.
Hey, yo, at Ferrari, Kool-Aid is red and it is strong. So, and I will continue to drink it, baby.
That's what I'm drinking
real fast
in this cup.
To my Ferrari homeboys over there. Real fast to my fanboys over there. Wasn't this the race that Binotto said they were going to crank the engines
they
up to
did.
11?
They said they had something they were bringing in terms of like some upgraded power, and I didn't see it.
Hey, I saw Ferrari on the podium.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about the other guy?
He got screwed.
Well, Leclerc just had a disastrous day. He went off. He locked up two big lockups twice. Like, he was just a disaster just on his end. I think probably the Ferrari seemed like the third best package today.
Fair.
It just was poor execution from Leclerc.
Yeah, with everything kind of.
He's not used to all that power.
Freezing and.
Not after 2020.
I mean, the hope is that next year we're not dependent on power units to be where the order is. It's supposed to be much more on the teams, you know, the aero side, you know, for McLaren, this is going to be the first year with James Key that he's actually had the freedom to develop the entirety of the car, because we're not talking about development tokens. We're not talking about having to fit a new power unit for the first time in forever with that team. And that's something of their own making and something that they've had to deal with. So it's going to be, I think, at least early, I think you're going to have Ferrari, McLaren, maybe in front of Mercedes and Red Bull for a bit until they come up, because they've had to put a lot of resources into their 21 car. Yep. And these other guys are focused on 22.
I mean, the thing though, that if you're Red Bull and Mercedes, though, I would say equally, or you still have, I think, in my opinion, the best motors. I mean, you've got the horsepower of everything. If you look at pace, you look at GPS tracking on straight lines, those two cars are by far the fastest. So if you're carrying that over, you know, I think it may be, a lot of it may depend on track. You know, at a Bahrain, something like that, early in the season, you may see the Mercedes and the Red Bulls be right there at front. But yeah, I agree. I mean, the Ferraris had a hell of a lot more time to get into aero bits, so they might seriously have an advantage when we get to some more technical tracks. So it might shake things up a little bit, get things interesting for sure.
Yeah, so Deanna, let's go ahead and move on to AlphaTauri. Pierre Gasly in fifth, and maybe the shock of the day, Yuki Tsunoda in fourth place.
Yeah.
Tell us about their day.
Easily as a whole on the team, their best weekend of the season. And really, really great after a kind of very much up and down and a lot more down year times for Tsunoda this year. It was great to see him end on a high. But so starting with Tsunoda, very first time this year he's outqualified Gasly. He was the only other one outside of the Mercedes to qualify on mediums and stuck at P8. And so he went a little long on that first stint, had a fun little battle with Alonso. Well, both the AlphaTauris did and won that out. And then on the restart, the AlphaTauris had great pace and they cleared a gap to Norris. They had about an 11-second gap. So when the safety car came out, they had a free pit stop to put on the softs. And so then both Gasly and Tsunoda were able to pass Bottas on the restart and get that fourth and fifth. And also for Gasly, just to kind of touch on that, that virtual safety car really played into his hands because he qualified P12, started on the hards. So when the VSC came out, got a little bit of a cheap pit stop and gained some track position there. So just a really solid day from AlphaTauri, where we've seen them, at least on the Gasly side, kind of qualify well, and then sometimes the races aren't executed. So it was nice to see the race being executed this time. And yeah, just great way for them to end the season.
Yeah, excellent day by AlphaTauri, by both drivers, the whole team, and really a great season overall. John, any thoughts to close out Bottas' season? And his valiant effort to finish in P6 today.
Was he even in the race today? I've got one,
and that is cannonball.
he did have a nice little splash into the marina out there. That was actually probably the highlight of his day. Honestly, I mean, I know that they had to revert back on some engine stuff, and you know he's been Mr. Engine throughout the season. I don't know how many he's used. We've all lost count at this point, but. So that might have maybe had something to do potentially with where he started at, but I mean honestly, like, we saw one little decent battle with him towards the end there, but I virtually forgot that he was in this race. He and Mazepin both had about the same impact to this race, I feel like. So yeah, I mean, if you looked at free practice, I thought okay, we've had a solid chance here to have the wingman, you know, be a positive impact of this race. And then qualifying came around, and then the race came around, and just, I mean, I clearly started where, you know, finished where he started as well. So I would say I'm glad he got his cannonball in, and that he had a little fun, because yeah, I'm ready to write that off to the sunset.
Does Bottas having a better day impact the finished? And I'm not talking about better day, like he's fighting for second, but if he's any higher up in the classification, does it change it enough?
I think it does, because it certainly doesn't give Verstappen the free pit stop on the virtual safety car, certainly doesn't give him the free pit stop in the actual safety car at the end there, because he would have been somebody that Red Bull would have had to mark. We talked about in our preview the second gunners playing a role in this. And we both said both of them were going to, in order to do it, had to qualify in the top five. Sergio Perez did. Valtteri Bottas didn't. Perez played a big role, as we're going to talk about. Bottas did not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I feel like Bottas could have done, like, Hamilton had to, well, the first pit to cover off Verstappen, but then, like, had to keep track position for those last two. So if you had Bottas holding up Verstappen, maybe that could have opened up a window for Hamilton to pit, so he wouldn't have been as exposed towards the end. And yeah, I think there's a lot of things that they could have done with him, and he was just absolutely nowhere to be seen. So that was unfortunate, and it's just kind of, I think on the whole this season, Bottas has been the better number two, but Perez did it when it counted. Mm. So
Yeah, I mean, agreed. Does anybody actually believe, without getting too far into it, because we'll talk about it in just a minute here, but does anybody actually believe Bottas could have put up a similar fight that Checo did if it was Max Verstappen barreling down on Bottas, not the other way around?
Or hand to hand?
Yeah, probably not.
No.
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 But I think, yeah, I think in wheel to wheel battle, no. Yeah, we'll get into it in a little bit with Checo. But to Andy and Deanna's points, I think the covering off of the other driver during the VSC and the SC, I think that would have been your kicker there.
Yep.
It may have been something they tried, but then, you know, it was all about track position gain. You know, if they held him up just a little bit, just, I mean, we saw the effectiveness of Perez on a substantial gap and how quickly Max closed that up. So, you know, even the smallest little impact, I think could have been positive, but like we've said, I'm not sure he was even in the right country tonight, so it was quite embarrassing, to be honest with you.
All right, so moving on from the midfield, we will now move into the podium, which is what we all came here to talk about, because major, major things happened. So first, we'll get Sainz out of the way, finishing in P3, getting the final podium of the year for Ferrari and for Sainz. That moves him up into fifth place in the Constructors, his first year at Ferrari. Vincenzo, you got to agree, probably the most consistent driver on the track this year. Anybody got an argument against that?
You know,
he came prepared.
There's no argument. It's a hard stop. That's a mic drop, like hard stop. He really is. I'll be honest with you, though. I was kind of a little shocked when I saw him walking up to the podium. I was like, what the hell is he doing there? Because the broad, like, there was no indication of what was going on. But not surprised. He's positioned himself really well. It's kind of funny that, and I know that it's like he always gets in these positions under the most crazy circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's got to be some correlation. I'm going to figure out what the correlation is.
I've never seen a guy on TV less have more success. It's amazing. I mean, it's literally under the radar. You never know he's there. And then all of a sudden, like you said, James, he shows up and he's on the podium. Hey, yeah. There he is.
Well, it's like,
but we're only 7 days removed from him being the most successful driver without a win, right?
But here's the thing. So, does this put to rest, question for everyone, even non-Ferrari fans, James first, does this put an end to the talk that Leclerc's the number one driver?
I think Leclerc's still the number one driver. And I think we'll go into next year being the number one driver still. And I love Sainz. I really do. But I think it's still Leclerc's team.
I don't know that it puts it to bed, but it does now put an interesting spotlight on Ferrari leadership, because we do know that the boardroom was turned over for one Charles Leclerc, and he won that battle, the political battle inside of the Scuderia, and fair play to him. If Sainz continues to put pressure on, now the focus shifts. You look at Toto Wolff having to do that before. Mattia Binotto has to do this now and try to manage two drivers. And if Deanna's prediction is right and Ferrari come out of the gate super fast, what does that do to the dynamic? Because right now they're friends. But they're not at the business. They weren't at the business end of really anything that they wanted to get to. When you're talking about a driver's championship, stuff tends to get weird really fast.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think it just like more opens up the conversation. I think it'll be like have this conversation again mid season next season. I think we'll have a clearer understanding then. Just because, Sainz did have a slower start at the beginning of the season probably than Leclerc did. Just kind of getting used to the car, but Leclerc has had more kind of DNFs, incidents, things like that. And Sainz, I mean, I think he's fantastic. He's just quiet, puts his head down, gets the job done. Today, I mean, really, he had a very, very quiet kind of on his lonesome day, because Norris went wide at the start. He made up that position and then just went on with it. Unfortunately, because of the whole unlapping situation, he didn't get a chance to maybe put up a challenge to Verstappen and Hamilton. I don't think he would have gotten there, but he didn't get that chance. But other than that, just quiet, nice day. Doing what he needs to do.
John?
So I was going to ask you guys, you Ferrari guys, I know it, on the surface, it appears that they're friends and friendly. We saw things get a little spicy last week at Saudi Arabia between the two, which is, I think, the first time that I've ever seen the two, I feel like, really battle it out for a little bit there. generally it's been pretty cordial. There's been a couple of like radio, hey, I'm faster than him, hey, pick up the pace, kind of little sly comments, you know, as of late, but that was the first time I think I've seen them really go wheel to wheel. You know, what do you guys think? And, you know, what is the Scuderia Ferrari member over there? What are you hearing through the channels basically is, you know, is there anything more to that story?
I mean, there's a lot of talk just saying like it's Leclerc's team to that point. You know, I'd like to stir the pot just because as a Ferrari fan, I want to see more action and activity. Like I want them to win. I want them to push each other to be better. So this couldn't come at a better time that we've got a new driver who's pushing the number one guy, but not in a way like Vettel Leclerc. This is a different way of pushing each other. This is like, hey, we're both young guys that are gunning for a title, potential title. Signs. I don't know if it's that they don't like Signs or if he was originally supposed to be like a holdover for somebody else. But I think they're in a position now where you've got a guy who he finished in the points in every race this season, except for two with a brand new team. Leclerc can't say that this year at all. I mean, I think he retired twice. He finished out of the points another two or three times. And he's been in that car longer. So Sainz has come to the show and said, I've arrived. You have to pay attention to me. It'll be interesting to see how it changes next year. Again, to Deanna's point, it is Leclerc's team. They did do a lot to get him there. But if Sainz starts winning or if Sainz puts up more consistency next year in a different car again, I mean, can you argue it? Is it just, well, no, it's Leclerc's team. We're going to make sure he's in it first. I hope not, because to me, a constructors championship is more important for them than even a driver's championship right now. Like which someone's probably going to win, right? If you get a constructors championship, but that is so crucial to the ethos of Ferrari, right? It's like the constructors mean so much to them.
Go ahead, Deanna, before I answer. Looks like you had something.
I was just going to say my one thing with Leclerc and Sainz, just to kind of continue on this. I feel like Leclerc's peaks are higher, but his lows get a lot lower than Sainz. And then it'll just be interesting to see kind of which one of those kind of methodologies, I guess, wins out next year.
And Sainz has shown a really good ability this season more than any. To rescue a weekend that kind of goes off the rails a little bit and bring it back, especially on race day. He did that a lot with McLaren in the 2 years he was there. He's continued to do it with Ferrari. I think that's kind of his signature, you know, getting like he starts P15 and he finishes like third or fourth. So, I mean, that's great. So
I think the lows that Deanna mentioned like last year and this year are good years to have those because Ferrari's not fighting for top of the table. So he can get by a little bit under the radar as much as you possibly can as a Ferrari driver. But since he's not like losing a chance at a world championship by having some of those, I think he can get by. So that'll be interesting to see how that works out next year. I think that Ferrari's in a good spot in terms of having two good young drivers right now that can push each other. And we're going to see how that develops, but I think they can still reap the benefits of that right now. They're not quite at the point where it could become an issue. But who knows, if they do come out with a car that is able to win next year, maybe it'll change quicker than I want to think it will. But I think there'll be some good, hard, clean driving between those two. But, I mean, as Andy said, when they're going for a driver's championship, as important as the constructors is, like you said, Vincenzo, at the end of the day, they're individual drivers, and they're going to want that hardware as much as Max did it today.
So, fair enough.
It's something I look forward to watching all next year, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you guys. If, as someone who witnessed up close and personal as a Mercedes fan, the relationship and how it changed dynamically between Rosberg and Hamilton, being of the best of friends, you know, the guys, it didn't matter who was one or who was two early in, just high-fiving each other, just happy as can be, giving hugs, and to see how that shifted over a fairly short period of time to a pretty brutal battle between two teammates. I mean, I agree. If they come out strong, if Deanna's predictions are even remotely correct and they come out strong, Ferrari's going to have to pick a side, I think, sooner than later. If you guys truly believe that they've got a chance to win, I think, you know, you can't favor both, unfortunately. We saw them attempt to do that in prior years, and that was we had a lot of analysis paralysis, I think, that year. So, you got to pick a side. You got to favor one guy or the other. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
All right, good. All right, so now we finally arrived. Hamilton and Verstappen. If
I thought that was the podium, that's all I cared about.
Because isn't really anything else to
He's signing out for the night.
So these two have battled all year, and it's been pretty epic. And the whole season has had just the craziest of twists and turns, the most bullshit of decisions, the most frustrating of decisions, mainly by Michael Massey and the FIA. But it all came down to this race, and it was just so beautifully perfect that they were tied coming into the final race. And You hoped for something crazy to happen, I guess, in a sense, because you want to see like the craziest spectacle possible, at least as a sporting fan. I know that's what I want. But I could never have imagined something like this happening to really wrap up the entire season. So it's I don't know how we actually can dive into it. I guess we'll start with the start of the race. And not a good start for Max. Again, he really closed out the season with terrible starts, but Lewis Hamilton gets the lead, and I think we'll just bite the bullet and go with John first here. John, what was your take on Lewis Hamilton literally cutting an entire corner after Max Verstappen got in front of him and then maintaining a pretty big lead coming out of it and having no decision made whatsoever? Where do you stand on that piece of it?
I have an issue with the lead that was built. I think if you're Hamilton, you would have been smarter off to keep that lead until the end of that DRS, you know, and kind of close off that loop and then allow Max to close right back up on you going through that third sector there where overtaking is very, very difficult. I think that would have sealed the deal from a stewarding perspective real fast. The actual move itself, I think Karun did a great job leading up to this race. He documented five times where Max Verstappen has dive-bombed Lewis Hamilton and blatantly missed the apex on all five occasions, of which every single one of them, there either was a collision or a collision was avoided by Lewis Hamilton taking evasive maneuvers, which is what we saw today. Max Verstappen clearly missed this corner without a stretch. If you go back and watch the onboard, he doesn't actually even turn the wheel until he's almost at the outside of this corner. If you watch that compared to how he did the other 57 laps today, you saw that he hit his mark time in and time out on the apex the proper way. We saw Perez do it in a hell of a battle. It's unfortunate the best battle of the day was between Perez and Hamilton, but it was clean as hell. And Perez hit his marks, hit his apexes, and that's how racing is supposed to be. So I don't have an issue with, you know, him maintaining a position because of the fact that there was no way in hell that if a guy owns the corner, you have to give him the racing line. He owns that corner. You have to leave him space. There was no way in hell that was ever going to happen. Again, Max, I mean, he didn't actually make the corner. Half of his car left the track, but there you still you have to leave by the rules. You have to leave an outside. Yeah, his right tires are
well. No,
are
just half his car. By the rule, you have the whole thing, right? I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Yeah.
No, yeah, it has half his car was off the track, but by rule, you have to leave a space for the guy who owns that corner, which was Lewis Hamilton. So I don't have an issue with the maintaining of the position. I could see the gripe with the lead that was given. Like I said, if I'm Hamilton, I probably would have kept that lead going down to the final straight there, and then allowed him to close back up there, and then it's even Steven again. You know, it's all fair game. Clearly, you know, Lewis had the pace to pull back away from him, so I don't think that would have been a concern. So yeah, I'm surprised there wasn't an investigation or anything of note. Chalk it up to more inconsistencies. I mean, obviously I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan first and foremost, but I mean, as someone who has been disgusted, I think, for lack of a better word, by the inconsistencies, as a lifelong, essentially a lifelong fan of this sport now, you know, given my age, I've watched the sport for half my life, you know, throughout my entire adulthood and then some. This year has been challenging and frustrating for me personally. And it doesn't even have to do with Max and Lewis. It's just the inconsistencies across from up, you know, top of the grid, to the bottom of the grid. It's just been mind blowing. So yeah, that's my piece on that first section there. I'm surprised there was an investigation. I'm happy that, you know, he maintained it, because again, there was no way Max was gonna, you know, he literally doesn't even put in a single bit of steering lock until he's
so now we're back to turn nine again then, Andy. Where do you stand on Max's move there and then Lewis's advantage?
I thought each person going a little bit over, probably overstepping the bounds, basically nullified each other. I was okay with no investigation if that's the precedent that you wanted to set. I went into that going, okay, well, now we're going to find out what the rules really are today, because we haven't really known. So forget all the other races. This is what the set of rules are today. We're going to let them duke it out on track amongst themselves, playoff type rules. You know, it's like the Stanley Cup final in hockey. Unless you're taking the guy's arm off at the end of the game, that right arm for the referee is not going up and they're not calling a penalty. Fine. If that's the standard, I was good with it at that point.
I think if Brazil's a penalty for Max, then 100% you got to call this on Lewis.
Maybe it's turnabout fair play for that one. I don't know.
Yeah. I honestly think that there are points in this championship where it's almost like, and we've seen it, you know, we compare with like baseball umpires here in the States. We have a lot of United States listeners. And, you know, when you have that one that's like a borderline, you know, strike three, and the next time the guy comes up, you feel like he just gives just a little bit more off the plate, or, you know, just it's almost like, hey, my bad, I'm going to make this up to you next time. And I feel like today was almost an example of Brazil, but we've seen this time and time and again. I feel like it's just like, yeah, we might have screwed that up last time. We're never going to admit that in public, but we'll kind of make it even again this time. So,
Deanna, your thoughts on the corner?
Consistency.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with the stewards staying out of it. It doesn't surprise me that they did that today, like Andy was saying, just kind of not wanting to interject, even though we can other bits later. But anyway, yeah, it's just been so inconsistent all year long that it's like, well, I feel like there's so many incidents from the season where you can point at one incident where it's like, okay, they should have given it back, given this precedent. But at another time, like, you keep going because, like, everybody says precedent, but I feel like we've kind of gone back and forth. And it's just so inconsistent and, you know, very frustrating. Anyway,
and that's just Vincenzo, my issue. I'm assuming you're on the same track there with the consistency or lack thereof.
Yeah, Deanna made my point. I mean, without consistency, how can you? There's no precedent. There becomes no precedent. And so without precedent, every single situation becomes its own individual call. And on top of it, you then get pressured into making calls in big games, which I'm not a big fan of, where it's like, well, this is a big spot, so they let them play. Or this is it just doesn't make sense for a sport overall, because like if this was week one in the NFL, or this is race one in Formula One, you know, we'll let it slide. It's not as important. There's 20 other races to go, but then you get to race 22 or whatever, and now you're in the same situation. Then are you not going to call it again? Are you going to call something? I was okay with Lewis not having to give back the place. Like John said, I mean, Max clearly dove into that corner. But I'd like to see a lot more consistency with the rules and calling things to what the rule book actually says, not just, well, I'm the race director or I'm the steward. We're going to change the rule. We're going to make up the rule. I mean, there's parts in the rule book that actually are like, you know, discretionary. And that, how do you govern? How do you as a player know, you know, or as a driver know what to do if the rules aren't even like exactly written properly. So yeah, consistency and also not really looking at it as, well, this is the championship decider. No, every race can be a championship decider. Look at Spa. You know what I mean? So that's where I
started. Yeah, that's definitely super frustrating throughout the year, as we've detailed on the podcast. But I thought for the move itself and everything, I knew as soon as Lewis got that lead off the line, you knew Max was going to make a move at some point as soon as he possibly could. Being on softs, he had to get ahead of Hamilton. So to see him dive down the inside there, it's like that shouldn't have surprised anybody and shouldn't have surprised Lewis either. I thought that if Lewis had given up the place or had been told to give up the place, at the time I kind of thought that would have been the right decision, because I really thought he got a huge advantage by driving off the track and then just like cutting the whole corner. I thought maybe if there were some of those like styrofoam bollards or something that he had to go around to slow him down, that would have made it a little bit more fair. But wasn't surprised by the move. I was cheering when the move happened. Made for a pretty wild start. Definitely disappointed. But I think even if Lewis had given up that place back, I mean, Lewis was going to get him somewhere in that first stint anyway. So my confidence wasn't high in that. I just thought it would have been the right thing to do for him to give up that place. But in the end, I guess it didn't really matter. Go ahead, Andy.
Do we think that with the reprofiling of the track and not having a clear, defined escape like route if you go off, i.e. a Russia, did that maybe play into, you know, the calculus from both of them? Because like, if you would have had that, if you would have had the foresight to say, hey, we'll put the bollard there, and this is the clear way that you have to rejoin if you're off. Cause it's a lot of runoff. I don't think I realized how much runoff was there until I saw that.
But I don't know how many people normally like blow that chicane, or like how many, like, I feel like that runoff in Russia, it's a lot different, that kind of that corner versus kind of going through this tight chicane. But yeah, I also just kind of talking about this track layout. I mean, we got a reprofiling. I think we did take out a good overtaking opportunity though. And then like for the first half of this race, nobody was in DRS range. Like they couldn't really follow each other that well. So I think overall, like it was a lot more satisfying to watch the cars drive through there, but I don't know that it was the greatest update, at least for this package of cars. So anyway, that's just my thoughts on the track on the whole. I still don't like Abu Dhabi is basically moral of the story.
All right, so we come out of that incident to start the race, and then Lewis Hamilton really looked to have the race in hand for some time. They're building up a pretty sizable lead on Max. So Andy, why don't you talk us through the next big moment of the race?
Well, I think there's two. One is the virtual safety car, and I forget who caused it, but I think it was
Gio.
It was Kimi. No. It was Gio. It was Giovinazzi. It was the other Alfa Romeo, because Kimi did make it back. So when that happens, now you can get the free pit stop. So Lewis, trying to maintain track position. That was the Mercedes. We were going to ride or die with that. We did not want to be out of P1 whenever we could. So they elect to keep him out. Max gets effectively a free pit stop. He is now on faster tires with about a 17-second deficit, with about 20 laps to go. So I think they even mentioned it on the broadcast. He was going to have to be 8/10 of a second or so quicker. He gets to within about 12 or so seconds before both guys start to hit traffic. They start passing lap traffic, getting blue flags, all of that. It looked like we were pretty much done. And then one Nicholas Latifi with a scrap, the end of the scrap with Mick Schumacher, had some dirty tires, drops it going into turn 14. We saw that being the problematic corner of the weekend. We saw more wrecks there than anywhere, as it turned out. And now we have safety car, and now it all gets turned around.
So, Deanna, initial reaction to the Latifi accident, were you thinking safety car or were you thinking red flags? I know personally, I was thinking red flag as soon as I saw it.
Well, I thought Massey was going to throw it. It seemed like similar to a Baku incident where it was definitely we're going to finish under the safety car unless we throw the red flag. So I thought that's where we were headed, especially kind of how Massey has a penchant for the dramatic, it seems like sometimes. So or like wanting to create a show, like that is fine. The way that in which it happened ended up happening was not, in my opinion. But yeah, I think the red flag, there would have been controversy, but it all would have been legal and there would not have been all the protests and all of the yada 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 after. It would have given Hamilton a chance to change onto soft tires too, and we would have just seen that like 5-lap shootout. like probably at the end there, you're probably still leaning more towards Lewis winning. But anyway, I think that's the cleanest way to end it and to still give the fans and the show and do all of the things and operate within the rule set that we have. So that is what they should have done. Yeah. Get on to what they did.
Well, Vincenzo, I saw that you, I saw you tweeted that you thought it should have been a red flag and let them battle it out at the end on new tires each. In that case, if that had happened, is it still Max Verstappen is the 2021 champion, or do you think Lewis Hamilton would have pulled it out?
No, I think Lewis pulls it out from sheer power of the W12. I mean, he was clearly he was faster on slower tires. My exact tweet was red flag, allow for everyone to have fresh tires. I said rolling start, but standing start, whatever. And then true shootout for five laps, all the drama, none of the controversy. I mean, I truly believe that if someone held a gun to my head, I'm like, that's exactly what should have been done. And I think it ends up with Hamilton winning, which is not why I feel that he was robbed either. I feel that it was just the minute the accident happened, it was another one of those things where it's like, okay, what are we going to do here? And you're watching like this delay. You're five or six laps from the end of the final race. It's going to decide everything. And you decide, well, I think because it was almost a full lap before they decided to go with the full safety car. So they were under a virtual. Then they
were under double wave yellows first.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So it was double wave yellows. Virtual, right? That's right. Because at first it was like, when is there a safety car? That's right. And then they finally get to that safety car, and then this is what really got me kind of aggravated. Was like, you see Latifi's car, if they couldn't move it, they weren't dragging it anywhere. You needed marshals to come out onto the track. You needed a crane to come out onto the track to remove this car, and they're still allowing laps to pass by for a championship deciding race without stopping. I mean, I don't know. I had some pushback. People like, that's not a red flag incident. And I'm like, they didn't have a problem throwing red flags last week. now all of a sudden we're not going to throw a red flag in this situation. And I think that's ultimately what caused the biggest that is the biggest part of the controversy, aside from the unlapping part of everything, was the fact that they didn't go to red flag. I truly, truly believe that it could have been called differently, and that would have made the difference, at least given us an opportunity to see a true battle between Max and Lewis, rather than Lewis is on 40 lap tires. Like they were old and they were slower compound. They were slower compound, right? Yes, he had the hards on.
Yeah, he had the hards on.
I agree with your tweet, except for the controversy part, because even if they had done that, there would have been a new way for them to find some controversy this season.
Like Deanna said, different controversy. It wouldn't have been what this is, you know, like this is fixing and racism. Like, it's a whole different level of controversy. Red flag at least would have been like, that was dumb. Don't throw the red flag. You know, I truly do believe that.
So, John, where did you stand when you saw Latifi in the wall? I'm sure your heart sank a little bit, but were you thinking it was going to be a red flag? Were you thinking it was going to be just a safety car? Where was your mindset at that point?
I mean, based on what we saw last week, I thought, and given the amount of laps, like you guys are saying, I thought it was going to be a red flag. Again, it did take another like awkward moment there where it like a little too long to even throw a safety car. But I mean, last week I talked about this. It took 8 minutes and 43 seconds last week from the time the safety car came out to we had a red flag last week, to which we manipulated that race. Thankfully, it all washed out in the end. Well, for some drivers, others were still royally screwed. I think what Norris was just completely effed by that whole situation and didn't have an opportunity to really recover much. But like I said, thankfully the championship washed out fine, but it had detrimental effects down the grid. And why. There was no reason for that. There was no, even if you listen, if you look back last week at Norris's radio, they were talking, and then the Hamilton was doing the same thing with his guys. You know, it was like, okay, are they going to throw a red flag? Let's wait. Okay, clearly, I guess we're not getting a red flag. Let's pit. And then bam, you know, next thing you know, 8 minutes later or something like that, you know, we get this thing and we change it all up. So, yeah, I mean, like Vincenzo said, if you want, you know, all the drama, if you want a photo type finish, you want a battle because Lewis Hamilton is driving away with this thing and honestly whooping ass for 90% of this race, that's it. I mean, now I don't think there's not going to be any controversy because I would say there's a 99.99% chance that those two hit each other on a restart. And I'm not sure who finishes, then we might have protests in a whole other form or fashion. But at least, you know, I would say as much as that would suck, especially if, you know, Hamilton doesn't finish or something, I would at least be pissed off in a different way. Because I was, you know, I've come to expect this stuff from Red Bull and Verstappen this year. I've expected the dive bombs and the aggressive move and, you know, not a single overtake, either being overtaken or overtaking has been done, I don't think, clean between the two of these guys throughout this entire season. So I don't know. I at least expected that. I think, it didn't make sense. And even Michael Massey, even trying to get some drama here at the end, he even almost effed that up because he made a decision with about 30 seconds to go before it would have been too late. So it's like, okay, Dude, you can't even get your own shit together.
Here's the part of this that boggles my mind. Why, when you know this is a micro situation, why you don't have a chart of laps left, this is what we do with under 10 laps, and it should be published so that all the teams know exactly what we're going to do. We're going to do a quickie restart between laps 10 to go and 6 to go. 5 to go, we're probably going to throw a red flag. Why? Because we can't clear cars fast enough in order to get the race going. If we've decided that we're going to make the end of the race something we want to see and we want to avoid races ending under safety car, that's fine. Pre-prescribe everything that should have happened. This should have been just flipping to the right page and pointing to something, not making it up and going, well, let's see. Let me figure out what I want to do with this. And kudos to the marshals for getting that car cleared, because I didn't think they were going to get that car cleared, especially once we saw, you know, a fire suppressant go off, you know, trying to put the car out from being on fire. But then you end up in this quandary of a situation that you never, ever, ever should have been in. And that's, you know, there's a saying, the will to win is nothing if not the will to prepare. And Michael Massey was not prepared tonight. And that's the problem.
He hasn't been all season.
And it's not just tonight. Yeah. Let's be honest. I've lost track, honestly, of how many times, you know, something dumb has happened. And I think in all fairness, I was shocked, and I told my buddy who was watching the race with me this morning, I was shocked when they originally said the lap cars were not going to overtake. I know that's a discretion.
That was on lap 57, right?
Yep. Yeah. That was the first part of
that. That was the first. Yeah. Right. Later on, it changed. That's right.
You know, if all had been square and a thoughtful, intelligent decision would have made, I probably still would have come out on the bad end of this deal as a Hamilton fan. But I would have been, at least rules would have been implied consistently. Again, it's a theme here, right, guys? I almost wonder if you make that decision a little bit earlier. Max is already pitted, but I almost wonder if you're Hamilton, do you take that opportunity to pit? Because traditionally speaking, we've always added a lap to allow these guys to get back around. That would have been a freebie piss up. Yes, he would have given out track position, but let's be honest. Not even in an insert whatever higher being you believe in would have kept Max Verstappen or anyone who's a halfway even remotely okay driver behind them with 40-something lap old tires on hards on a guy with one lap old sauce. Mazepin might have made this move stick tonight. Let's be honest.
He never had the chance.
Why? Yeah, you had the perfect, like you guys said, you had the perfect opportunity. I hate the red flag rule, but this would have been the one time that it actually made sense to fucking do it.
Yeah.
Send it and off.
Then we would have had a shootout. We would have
send
had
off that tire change rolling style.
Deanna's we would have had a Drive to Survive episode all on its own over those last five laps. We would have had enough material because these guys would have given it hell. There would have been parts flying 100%. I'm not sure both drivers would have finished. But at least I felt like, okay, we would have raced it out. It you know, if I lose that battle as a Hamilton fan, even if he has to pit and I'm starting P2 in that, as a Hamilton fan, I can live with that because I can say, you know what, sometimes it just shit doesn't go your way, and that's racing. But this didn't feel like one of those that's racing moments to me. It felt it was such a clusterfuck of epic proportion that it's just hard for me to quantify. And I hope for, you know, obviously I hope Hamilton sticks around. I know he alluded there at the end, like he made a little comment, like we'll see about next year, like a little tiny hint that, hey, maybe I'm just going to call it. I hope that's not the case. No chance. I hope we get battles. Obviously he's got a couple more years left on this deal, but it doesn't matter if it's Leclerc and whomever next year fighting it out. I don't want to see championships decided like this. And it bit my boy today, but as the bigger, when Hamilton's gone, I'm still going to be an F1 fan. And this is not what I signed up for. As someone who's invested so much of my life, so many hours and hours and hours into this show and to watching the sport, this is not what I signed up for. I felt like NASCAR today. And as someone who grew up in NASCAR, worked in NASCAR for a little bit, that's a shame, man. It's a shame to see when entertainment and you can't even get that right. Like if you're going to value entertainment over sport, at least get it right and at least give a proper show. So that's my high horse for this week. We made it an hour and a half before I got pissed off. So.
Yeah.
I think I'm relatively cool, calm, and collected for the most part, considering that, it just made a mockery of the situation. I don't want to lose that way. I'd rather lose by getting my ass handed to me, but at least I have a fighting chance. Like, at least let the other guy know that we're in a fight if I'm going to go down and get my ass whooped. You know, don't just sucker punch me. So,
Deanna, did you have something to add?
It was a while ago. So back to the incident.
Sorry, I've been holding that in for a while.
We're not even to that part yet.
It's been 9 months, guys. Sorry that been a long season.
Go ahead, Deanna.
Anyway, so back to the Massey decision. I think this was just the culmination of everything that annoys me about Massey. It's just the kind of throw it together, can't make a decision, very wishy washy, like just can't stick to anything. I also like he had 4 laps to call a red flag at some point, and like he very clearly he wanted it to be like Lewis Hamilton versus Max at the end. He could have called the red flag when he told the cars to unlap themselves still. So like it just makes no sense. And this has never happened ever where you just let a few cars through. Like it just felt so outside of the rules, which it kind of was. And it's just like such a strange incident. And then what kind of freaked me out at first because I didn't see the cars go through. So I thought we were restarting as the cars were unlapping themselves. And I was like, that's kind of a safety concern. And that's your number one job. Not, they ended up getting through and it was all fine. But it was like, if you're going to try to do all that though, and the last half of the lap and like you get into communication issues, which is also kind of what ish led to the Verstappen Hamilton incident in Saudi is communication, poor communication. And then, so I don't know what you could have potentially had here. Cause nobody knows what's going on. This is something that has never happened before. And I also want to say, I fully agree with you, Andy. If like 5 laps to go, there needs to be a like rule put in place and we can just kind of point and check that box and yeah.
Point and click and shoot.
Done with it.
It's all you got to do. It's not really that hard. It really doesn't have to be this hard and it doesn't have to leave an entire fan base just feeling so weird. I cannot describe. I've been trying all night. Or this entire day since I've watched it, since I was trying to type it. And I said, there's a lot to unravel. I don't know what I'm going to do. to try to come up with the word to describe the feeling, because it's so weird to have this incredible thing come down to this incredibly bad decision that was just made under pressure and it just felt like it didn't have to be. And for a sport, I love this sport as much as you do, John. They took a step back today. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You cannot do it this way. The fans deserve better. Max Verstappen deserves to be a completely legitimate 2021 world champion. He's going to have, in a lot of fans' views, an asterisk by his name, and that's not fair to him. And we were denied seeing what I thought was the final actual shootout. Red flag it, fine. Following somebody who got, you know, a Lando's race, actually, their engineer didn't know what was going on. He was just telling him, we're going, you got to go. We don't know why, but go. So, I mean, it was across the board, just a complete fumble.
And that's because the only drivers that mattered were the ones between these two, between Max and...
And never mind the other 18 group, drivers or their interests.
Yeah, your race meant not one, two shits to Michael Massey today. And if you're a fan of those drivers as well, you got to say what... I mean, it's amazing when, you know, obviously my loyalties are clear, you know, with who I support. But when you have Red Bull and diehard Verstappen fans texting me today and just saying, yeah, wow, like... That's not how we wanted it either. Like I mean, the only thing I said in the preview, I think my only wish was may the best man win. And without a doubt, Lewis Hamilton was the best man today. But again, give us a shootout. If I lose, I lose. And I, you know, the worst case scenario is I have to have James ride my ass about it for the next 5 years. Fine.
Done.
But at least I can hold my head high and say, okay, we lost.
Vincenzo, I'll ask you then. Did F1 take a step back today? I mean, they had another opportunity all season long, attracting new fans. We saw the numbers come out for ESPN's telecasts. I'm sure today would be maybe be their highest one all year. We'll see. But did they take a step back, or is this kind of something the newer fan likes, the chaos? So now they're just kind of to thread the needle between appeasing the dinosaurs, Andy and John, or like the newer class of fans that maybe like a little bit of chaos, like the drama, that the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, the kind of the this league type comments, to steal an NBA term. So did they take a step back, or are we just going to keep chugging along, bringing on new fans?
It's tough to say. I mean, in the heat of the moment, people are saying they're never going to watch. They're not watching again. I mean, people said that about the NFL during those protests. People said it during the U.S. elections in 20s. I'm moving to Canada. You say it passionately in the heat of the moment, and then it kind of just goes away or whatever. I think that's the case here. And I don't mean, and I'm trying to pick my words carefully, because I do genuinely feel for Mercedes fans, Lewis fans, because it does feel robbed. To say that new fans like controversy, maybe, because it makes for good drama and good TV, but we already know that TV and like Drive to Survive is, I don't want to say scripted, but we know that there's very well produced manipulation of things, and that's fine for TV. But to take that and translate it to the actual sport, that's kind of where I step back. To say the sport step back, I don't know. Controversy, like, it happens in all sports. I don't know if it's going to step back. I think this is going – I think the hope, F1's hope, Liberty Media's hope, is that this will go into – will carry – listen, we're already in the middle of December. This gets us at least another couple weeks in the news cycle, right? Through the holidays. The holidays will come and go. And then, oh, suddenly we're going to be at the Court of Appeals, right? And then there's going to be new interest in it. We only need to get to the middle of February before we get to testing. So there's like not much of a gap here. Once we get to testing and new car reveals, I think it'll be like, well, new season's upon us. That's all that matters. To fans, like, there's not much time here that needs to go by. to say this will be marred for, you know, for a long time. Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, the steroid era in baseball caused everyone to say all those home runs were asterisks. How many people are saying that now? Aside from like true diehard baseball fans, right? Like no one even talks about that anymore. No one talks about McGuire and Sosa and all that. No one talks about it. So I think long run, Formula One's got to know this. Liberty Media knows how this works. Long term, it's not going to affect anything. Right now, you might have some people saying things, but listen, the season starts in 3 months, and when there's no other sports going on that are of interest to you, or you're looking for something to watch on a Sunday morning, oh, look, Formula One's back. I remember I really liked that sport. Oh, yeah, something happened at the end of last year. Maybe it'll happen again. Like, I think that's kind of the progression in people's minds. So, no, to answer it in the short, I do not think they take a step back. I think it's a very – they definitely need to address the FIA. But here's the thing. Drive to Survive doesn't address technical things or FIA. So most people don't even know what that all that is.
Yeah, that's I was going to add to that. Like, I think today was a bad day for F1 in the kind of more dedicated fan segment. But for all those new fans, Drive to Survive fans, people just casually watching it, like, this was just some crazy dramatic race, like, over the top. Like, that will create so much more engagement than a nice, clean, boring race will, and get so many more eyeballs and all of the stuff that will continue to grow the sport as a whole. The decision today was very frustrating for those kind of internal fans. So I don't think that's something that they want to do long term. But it definitely what they did today in the will be a benefit, which is how the world works.
Unfortunately,
I tweeted this though, and I know I'm going to sound like a dinosaur as James puts it, and I'll live with that. Liberty Media, obviously an American company. We've seen the American influence over Formula One is becoming more and more prevalent over the last few years, between Williams and obviously Haas and Liberty Media and multiple races and et cetera, et cetera. I mentioned NASCAR, and I don't want to hate on NASCAR. I'm a NASCAR fan. Like I said, I mean, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina of all places. So this is the home of NASCAR. You know, everything breathes here. 25, you know, we're going into this direction here where we've got 25 races next year, knock on wood, assuming nothing dumb happens in the next few months, which is absurd to say the least. A lot of drivers, a lot of teams have already, you know, said, what the hell? You're going to kill us. You're literally going to kill us physically and mentally. I think you got that. You've got manufactured drama that we've now seen. I challenge Liberty Media, and I challenge fans, new and old, to take a step back and see what's happened to NASCAR over the last few years, to see the transformation of that sport from the time Dale Sr. unfortunately passed, to the car tomorrow, to the playoffs, to the stage racing, and everything that's come into it. The whole time that all that transition, all that chase, always got to be bigger. Oh, we got to have four quarters. Oh, we got to have that last second play. We got to have that final race where four guys are leveled on points. And it doesn't matter. Who doesn't give a shit who's the best driver of the year? It's all about that last second drama. Look at the stands. Look at the TV ratings. They're plummeting. I live a few miles from Charlotte Motor Speedway. They've taken out over 100,000 seats at that track. They knocked them down. Brand new seats at that. They were... In the last 10 years, they built these immaculate grandstands, and they've knocked them down now because they cannot – because for years they had giant banners over them because they couldn't sell a single seat, and now they've just gone ahead and just knocked it down entirely. So I'm going to sound like a dinosaur, and I'm okay with that, but you have to be very, very careful of what you prioritize here, because chasing that grandstand, chasing that final glorious, insane moment, I love it when it happens. But it needs to happen naturally.
Yeah.
And somehow, some way, through all this bullshit this year, we've had two drivers for the first time since 1974 in the final race tied on points. And we still managed to fuck that up somehow. How? I don't know. But we fucked it up. So you have to be very, very careful what you wish for here, because fans got real sick of that bullshit in NASCAR pretty quickly. new fans, they couldn't get enough new fans coming in, and the old fans said, fuck it. So you got to be very careful when you see ratings plummeting and half empty grandstands weekend. I mean, you have a championship race and half of it's empty. Thank God the right man won in NASCAR this year, but that's typically not the case. It's a slippery slope, and you gotta draw a line somewhere in the sand and stick with it. You gotta make decisions on overtakes. If you have a guy on the grid that you're scared to overtake every week because you know he's gonna hit you, that's not Formula One racing. I agree with you, Max Verstappen. This is not Formula One racing. This is not what we signed up for. Drivers, as we saw today with Perez and Hamilton, drivers should be able to go, as we saw with Alonso and Hamilton, drivers should be able to go wheel to wheel, inches, millimeters from each other and not hit, because those are the best fucking drivers in the world. That's what I want. It's what I sign up for. It's what I pay for. It's why I spend my hard-earned money on this sport. That's all I want. That's all I request. Be very, very careful with this chase for entertainment. And like I said, you had a perfect opportunity and you still messed F it up. So, well, that's 2021 for you.
Over on Twitter, I think, John, you and I got into this over, I don't know if you all remember the survey that went out earlier this year from F1 and Motorsport. And in the survey, I took particular notice of the verbiage used when they described the spec. They actually used the word spectacle numerous times. Maybe a little bit of a British English thing. I don't know if that's the case, but I know a few other people kind of picked up on it too. And that's what gives me pause big, more than anything else, is like, spectacle. Why are you focused so much on the word spectacle here? Using that word is, I don't know, it seems very poignant. Like, it's a specific word to use, and calling a race weekend a spectacle, just, it's interesting. So if they're looking to turn everything into spectacle rather than motor racing, which Michael Massey oddly described as what we got at the end of the day, that's a bigger problem. That's a bigger issue. And that's where the sport steps back, if that's a trend that continues.
All right, so let's step away real quick. We're going to take a quick break here from one of our favorite sponsors. And then two more things.
One, we never talked about Perez.
We're not done yet. We're not done yet. We just had to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about it.
Okay. I thought we were still finishing.
There's still plenty of post-race shenanigans to go through. Okay. And I personally want to talk a lot more about the Checo. So.
And we still actually haven't really talked about the lap car thing all the way. Yeah. At least we haven't described it. We've talked around it, but we haven't talked about it. So
yes, due to technical reasons, we need to take a break right now, so we will be right back.
Attention listeners from across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston, do you have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like they're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, one word, 20% off, free shipping. Let's get back to it.
All right, welcome back to Season 3, Episode 57 of the OUTLAP F1 Podcast. I'm your host, James, along with my wonderful co-hosts, each and every one of them, Andy, John, and Deanna. And we do have special guest Vincenzo Lentino, and we are very happy to have him on the show. So now we can get into some of the post-race stuff, and for that, I'll give it to Deanna to walk us through a couple penalties. Yes. Or, I'm sorry, a couple protests.
Yes, so kind of going back to the final lap incident, what actually happened. So Massey said the cars can unlap themselves, specifically the four cars in between Hamilton and Verstappen, which was Norris, Ocon, Leclerc, and Vettel. So they get out of the way. We get the restart. We get Hamilton, Verstappen. Verstappen wins. But after that, Mercedes lodged two separate protests, the first one being overtaking under the safety car. So Max did edge ahead as they were going to that safety car restart, but stewards ruled with Red Bull, saying, having considered the various statements made by parties, stewards determined that although car 33 did at one stage for a very short period of time move slightly in front of car 44, at a time when both cars were accelerating and braking, it moved back behind car 44, and it was not in front when the safety car period ended, i.e. at the line. So that was the first protest. The second protest was... Why did I just draw a blank? Thank you.
Well, I'll help you out here. It was the, Mercedes is claiming that the race director, in this case, Michael Massey, did not apply Article 48 of the restart procedures correctly. And they basically ended up kind of timing themselves out in their ruling, saying there wasn't really enough time. He had the he has the gravitas with which to do it, and we're going to stand by it. So immediately, but so both protests are effectively denied by the set of stewards at the track tonight. So right now we have Max Verstappen as the 2021 driver's champion. Mercedes has then launched the intent to appeal. And if anybody remembers from every time we've done this so far, you have a certain number of hours. You have to file it this day. Otherwise, you basically forfeit it. So now Mercedes has 96 hours to come up with, again, something new, relevant, and significant that would then reopen this investigation because the stewards have ruled on it in the moment. Here's the other rub now. The other rub is the FIA gala, which actually does confirm the driver's champion and gives the trophy to Max. Max did not touch the championship trophy tonight, even though it was there, because it's given at the gala. They have to get through this intent to appeal or and make their appeal by Thursday. Otherwise, it's pretty much done and dusted, and then the FIA flips the calendar over. If they can get to that point and they get rejected, then we possibly then end up going to the International Court of Appeals and possibly a hearing in Paris, and that can happen after the season ends, even though Max gets the title. So we are a long way probably from this being done. It doesn't look like Mercedes wants to compromise on any of it. And then, but here's the other part. Every new level we get to, the case for Mercedes gets that much harder to make. So I don't see this flipping at this point, simply because I don't know what you're going to find that was new or something that the stewards didn't have available to them when they ruled today. They did wait 4+ hours. Trust me, I know I didn't move from my computer for 4 hours after this race ended before they finally made their determination. So it's a lot of post-race drama. And that's what we know.
From a fan perspective, if you're a Hamilton fan or if you're a Mercedes fan, and John, maybe you could chime in on this, but let's just say it does get overturned at some point. Long shot, super long shot, probably not going to. Let's just say it happened. Everyone has literally been robbed of the opportunity to celebrate in that moment. And that's a big part of fandom. That's a really big part of being a fan, is being able to celebrate a moment. Kind of happened with Carlos earlier in the season when it was after the fact he got, third place or something like that. And it was like, all right. Cool, you got third place. I mean, no one cared, right? No one. It's on paper, that sucks too, and that stings a lot. I don't think it's going to get overturned. I think there's very difficult, almost impossible, to provide evidence, like you said, Andy. The further it goes, but man, that stings. Like that stings.
And even if they do, what then? Let's say that the stewards agree to reopen it. What then becomes the remedy? Because what does Red Bull claim that – what did they do wrong? They did nothing wrong. They changed tires, they lined up, and they raced. So how do you take it at that point? So even if you get there – I even saw people saying they could nullify this race entirely. Well, great. Guess what? Max is still your champion on count back. So where do you go? There's almost no – there's no
– And I'm like, at this moment, I think that Mercedes is going to go through with it. But at some point, like, how do they justify that cost? Because I'm sure that's not
cheap. They may ultimately end up pulling out because they've just filed an intent to appeal. We've seen this before where other teams, when we had the five teams all going to protest the same thing at the same time, and then they all dropped off, and then it ended.
If it were to ever get overturned, that would be, I mean, you talk about taking a step back for F1. That would be just, that would be awful. And I want to say, I'd say that from either side of the spectrum as being a fan for Lewis or Max there. So yeah, that would just be awful.
I mean,
and I don't think you want to see Lewis win his eighth championship that way. I would have to imagine, John, maybe I'm wrong there.
No, as the guy that has the most stake in this battle, the most personal impact of this, I mean, I tweeted very shortly after the race, yeah, don't bother. Don't bother even protest. Like I wouldn't even done the two protests after the race, because one, there's no way in hell the stewards are ever going to be like, oh yeah, we screwed up.
You got
change it up. My bad, guys. That's not ever going to happen ever. They're never going to admit their own fault. They just, no, it's not going to happen. And two, again, when Lewis Hamilton is gone, I will always be a Formula One fan. This show, this race, was an absolute clusterfuck. The only thing that could make it even more of a clusterfuck is to then go back and we get a tweet 5 days from now that says, oh, Lewis Hamilton. No,
we're all sleeping.
No, I don't want that. Yeah. That disgusts me to even think about it. So I know they're going to. I mean, yeah, they might back out. I'm not shocked at all that they did the two protests. But as a fan, and as a Lewis fan, a diehard Lewis fan, that's not how I won either. Because, again, Red Bull did nothing wrong. I thought going into this race it was going to be all about Red Bull and something stupid. It's clearly not. The only way you can make this look even worse for the sport is to change it now. Just slap a stamp on it, send it, and we'll hope, learn from our lessons and we get a good show next year.
I do think this may finally be the impetus to actually, Deanna, to your what you said even last week, to really take a look at this rule book. It's however many articles long. There's things in there that probably don't make sense that are 30 and 40 years old that have never come up. Well, guess what? You're in the pinnacle of motorsport and stuff comes up. So let's really dive in, tear it up and start over. I don't care. You know, let's have a new agreement. Let's get all 10 teams to agree. This is what we're going to do in these situations, and this is what we're not going to do in other situations from a sporting perspective, because that's where the thing. Technical regulations are fine. I mean, we've figured that out enough to where I'm good with them, but the sporting rules have got to get looked at and how this stuff
is. Yeah, I mean, there's
out.
Just so many inconsistencies too, and like, I don't know, there's just been so many things exploited this season with all of the spa stuff and the time limits and all the force majeure, blah, 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 blah. Then the two laps and all that mess was the first thing. Then you had things like in the last race on the red flag, like restart, Lewis was 10 car lengths behind. That would be not allowed on the normal formation map, but allowed on the formation or the lap to the grid, apparently, kind of within the race, which is strange. Then you just had this is even allowed to happen, apparently. It's just like there just needs to be clear guidelines and rules. And even when it comes to like a lot of the stewarding and stuff, because you can just have like Max fans versus Lewis fans have two completely separate justifications for incidents and kind of be in some respects justified because of how vague the rulings are, how inconsistent the precedent is. And it's just, I think just from a kind of fan perspective and just general clarity. And so we're not just talking about stewards and incidents and we can focus on the racing on track. This needs to be clarified and improved definitely over the off season.
Well, hey, we got the teams that all agree on a new car, right, to help the package, help the racing, help the entertainment value. We all got the teams to agree to freeze the engines because that made the most sense. All the motors are pretty damn close to each other, gave them ample time to get where they're going to get. Cost perspective, big picture, it makes sense for the entertainment value of the sport. I think you got to do the same on the rule book, and I think you also need to take a hard look at that clause in there that makes Michael Massey judge, jury, and executioner. Because again, if you're going to have a clause in there that gives the FIA a out on any stupid ass decision, I mean, I joked on Twitter today, it's like my HOA, you know, I challenge them on things that aren't even in their HOA doc, but there's one little sentence in those 300 pages that says they can do whatever the hell they want if they want to. So it doesn't matter. Why even write the damn rule book if you're going to keep that clause in there? And we saw that as justification today. So that's got to be looked at as well.
All right. Anything else about the race before we move into the standing recaps? I think that's it. John, for the last time this season, at least until we do a review episode, why don't you break down the driver standings?
Yeah. All right. Verstappen, P1, 2021 world champion, 395.5. Hamilton, 387.5. Bottas, again, we'll say his name, but I forgot he raced today, 226. Perez, with probably the most influential performance of the day outside of, you know, Lewis Hamilton, at 190. Sainz, 164.5, so a huge gain for him. Norris dropping back to 160. Leclerc, 159. Look, those three have been battling out for quite some time now, so great way to finish it out. Ricciardo, 115 in eighth. Gasly, 110 in ninth. And Alonso rounding out the top 10 with 81.
John, points. Andy, break down the team constructor finishing.
So almost lost in all of this is the fact that Mercedes are 8-for-8 in the constructors. The thing that actually pays the money, Mercedes have swept the turbo hybrid era. They finish on 613.5 points. They defeat Red Bull, who come up with 585.5 points. Third place is Ferrari. Well done to them. 323.5 points. Fourth place, McLaren on 275. Fifth is Alpine on 155. Sixth is AlphaTauri on 142. Seventh is Aston Martin in 77. Eighth is Williams on 23. Ninth is Alfa Romeo on 13. And to no one's surprise, Haas ends the year on a donut, 0 points.
Thank you, Andy. All right, let's move into some emails. And for that, Deanna, you are up.
Yes, yeah, so starting with Christy Kilgore. Says, so if Mercedes wins an appeal, what does that change? Max didn't really do anything wrong. Could they take away a title because of an FIA screw-up? I can't wrap my mind around it. I think Andy did a pretty good job earlier of summarizing that whole situation. Okay.
Yeah, the only thing you'd be able to do is do like a count back yeah. situation on, and again, let's not bother, yeah. please.
Tired.
Too tired, please. I need a pillow. Let's just not.
Next up, Rachel Fleming says, firstly, full credit to Mick Schumacher, who kept it clean and seemed to have a good fight with the Williams. Also, what a man Lewis Hamilton is, kept his dignity throughout his interview at the end. Feel a bit gutted for him, but Max was robbed at Baku, so the result seems fair enough in the end. But not in that way. I don't even want to think about Michael Massey. so I don't think I even noticed Mick Schumacher all race. I just saw the Williams when they were DNFing.
So Schumacher is the one that had the battle with Latifi that ran him over the Wicked Pyramid curbs. And
he was on the inside when Latifi's tire got dirty, and that potentially caused all of it. All right. So
yeah, there was a lot of memes out there like Lewis going for eight, Mick Schumacher.
This is for my dad. You know,
I'm like, I'll handle it myself.
Because he kind of did it.
Storyline makes for.
I have to admit, for like a split second, when Lewis had to lap Schumacher, I was like, "Dear God, let's not write another storybook with Schumacher just taking out Hamilton." Please, God, I can't handle that.
All right. So next up, Jason Christian says, "Well, an unforgettable season ended in an unforgettable way. I don't even want to get into my feelings about the way it played out, but I hope you guys take a bit of time on the pod to talk about how awesome Checo's defending was. That was thrilling stuff. And we didn't cover this, and I will have to say that was the absolute highlight of the race for me personally. I thought Hamilton was just going to breeze back and be off into the distance, but somehow Checo still had life in 20-lap-old soft tires and put on quite a battle. And I think that started off, Max had a 9-second lead, or Hamilton had a 9-second lead over Verstappen. And at the end of it, Verstappen was only 1.7 behind. So just a great, great teammate battle. And ending that little battle with giving Max DRS on top of that was just great stuff.
And that legend. That's the pinnacle right there. Yeah, that's what you pay to see.
Yeah, that's fair play right there. It's a team sport. I would have 100% expected Bottas, even though he would have failed miserably, but I would 100% expected Mercedes to have Bottas do the same thing. And it was clean, beautiful open wheel racing. That's what we signed up for.
Although Lewis did say it was dangerous driving at one point.
I was going to try to avoid even bringing that up because that's just like.
I know, but he said it.
I think that's part of the gamesmanship and, you know, in the heat of things, fine. Again, this is why I want to rip up the rule book and start over so you don't have written messages like that kind of crap.
It was great driving.
Yeah, that was incredible drive by Checo there. As you saw it coming, it's like, this is going to, I mean, let's see how this plays out. This is Max's best chance, and Checo did everything he possibly could. I feel like it's so rare to see a car pass and be able to pass again and then pass again and then pass. Like, it was not something we get to see very often.
Let's hope that's a harbinger of things to come next year.
Yeah, give me more of that. Just go ahead and inject the blood into my veins. Yeah. I'll be a happy man.
All right, next up, Glenn Moore says, fuming. Oh, what an effing joke. I'm an old school fan. It seems that they only want soccer style fans now since Liberty Media took over. It's all about ratings. Michael Massey is on the Red Bull payroll for sure. Would Charlie Whiting have made the same shitty move? Nope.
The only thing I disagree is the Michael Massey on Red Bull's payroll. Yeah,
no.
Because I don't think Michael Massey has the fortitude or the intelligence to know what fucking day it is half the time. So I definitely don't think he's intelligent enough to take orders from one team or another. And he doesn't have the stones to do it either. We see the pushover that he is. So that's the only thing I disagree with that one.
As we've said many times, I think he is a nice, intelligent guy who just is not a pressure player. And I think that was clear as day today. He can probably have a wonderful career in another job at the FIA and can be like a technical delegate or something like that and measure wings for the rest of his life. He'd probably be great at it. He'd probably love it. He is not made for that.
I got to push back a little bit on the Liberty Media part. You know, it is about ratings when you're Liberty Media, and maybe Vincenzo, somebody who focuses on the business side of F1 can speak to this, but Liberty Media didn't buy F1 to lose money. They bought it to make money. And that's what they're doing like really well right now.
Yeah.
As frustrated as we're getting, if they keep making that kind of money, then that's all they care about. And that's just a fact of life.
At the end of the day, your problem really is with Liberty Media, right? Because they own it and they need it to make money. That's end of the day. They care about what that bottom line says. It's a company in their portfolio. You know, they own the Braves, they own Sirius XM. If those companies didn't make money, what would they do? You know, so you have to look at it that way. But I don't know.
I feel like
to say it influence things is. Oh, go ahead, guys.
One quick thing. There's a story we're gonna talk about once we kind of get all this stuff settled. There is big to do going on in the actual upper tiers of the FIA in terms of Ross Braun and him potentially vacating, and they're going to change how and who's the FIA and who's Liberty Media, because I think that's another angle to this that we're getting that makes it all gray. And
very
that's
good
why
point.
I think.
Well, yeah. There's also, so there's like, who's Formula One, who's the FIA, who's Liberty Media. There's three very separate entities that no one, I don't think anyone really knows where the lines are drawn, and that's where the problems are. Plain and simple. You know, would Bernie have allowed this? I don't know. I don't think so.
That's honestly, Andy, point. An episode that I just thinking about getting excited, having you like nerd out over that kind of stuff. I feel like I'm going to learn a lot.
I've got the article saved. It's fascinating. It's fascinating read.
All right. Next up, Dean Warwick says, I am looking forward to this podcast. What controversy, but what a sport. Well, here's the podcast for
Dino.
Yep. Oxcart.
The sad thing, you know, Dino saw all this happening as we joke, he's 17 hours in the future. So he's a rich man in Vegas. Although Vegas, you know, Andy, we didn't even talk about it. It's a crazy day when Vegas is just like handing out money. Like
the bookies said, fuck it. We out. You get all your money back. Paddy Power in the UK literally came out with a tweet in the middle of this and said, if you bet on Lewis today or you bet on Max today, we're paying them both out equally.
That's crazy.
Just let that sink in.
Whew, it's been a wild day.
That's 2021 for you, baby.
Next up, Oxcart says, I'm just going to say it. This is more effed up than a soup sandwich. What? I have never in my life flown off my couch and been speechless simultaneously.
So is that bread in between two cups of soup?
I was going to say, if there's only one person on this show yeah, that can figure this comment out, it has to be Andy. He's the only one that would know what a soup sandwich is.
I've never heard of that.
But I love the analogy.
Fair enough.
Well, it's actually soup sandwich. When you say that, it just means like something's not the way it should be. That's really, it's literally like a,
yeah,
I don't know. It's an idiom. Is that the right idiom?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'm just hungry, so I'm taking it way too literally. Right now.
I just wasn't expecting to read that as I was reading it. So anyway, next up, Colin Manning says nonsense. All of it. Just ask the race director who he wants to win. Again, we don't think he's – I think he's looking for a show less so than favoring one party or the other, and he just struggles a lot. So, anyway.
Messi just wants the fans to win, that's all.
Yeah. next up, Francesca says, FIA who broke their own rules to decide how they were to rule on themselves. Yeah, like it was going any other way. Had a similar vibe there. The Formula One says, side note, Sainz is now Ferrari's number one driver. Yep, we did.
A little bit about that earlier.
That one.
Spicy, spicy subject.
Next
there.
Up, David Doherty says, your thoughts of this race and the entire F1 season.
Listen to
I'm
the episode.
Save the season part.
Yep.
Dave. The whole other episode.
Yep. My one word is just wild.
Tune in. Spoiler.
2021 is gonna 2021 itself until it's done.
I think we should have a drinking game and go when we go back through, we take a shot for every stupid ass move that the FIA made and just see how hammered we are before it's all said and done.
And then you have to get up.
I would like to live, so I'm good.
Oh yeah, I'm good. And we'll put it all on video too. It'll be classic. It'll be more entertaining than
okay. Next up, Jenny Donahue says, what our input on the fact that this circus caused drivers like Kimi, Valtteri, and Antonio to not get the send-off or coverage they deserve for this race. Anybody want to take that one?
I mean, they didn't. I don't know. They weren't in contention anywhere. What do you expect? Like the rate, it was tied. This is only the second time ever that we've had a tied situation going into the final race. Like certain storylines are just not. You know.
You only have so many resources and so many cameras. And I know like Vettel did some donuts and
I didn't know that.
Maybe would, you know, if Kimi would have been out there, he would have done some donuts and stuff too.
It was.
I mean, Kimi doesn't even care, though. It's actually perfect for Kimi.
Yeah.
It's perfect. He doesn't give a shit.
The thing I was most upset about was that Kimi was voted driver of the day, but then he wasn't in his car to get the interview. I really wanted to see him just like ignore the person.
I was hoping to get the interview too.
It was just, it was unfortunate for him and Antonio both kind of had car issues and were done for. Also, Russell at Mercedes, his car kind of gave up. And then Valtteri, that was his own doing.
I think, though, if this is a normal finish, whoever wins, I think we get, like, the classic Abu Dhabi where we have 3-4 drivers on the front stretch doing some glorious burnouts. I feel like we were a little robbed of that today. Obviously, mechanical things in line. But I think if it would have played out naturally and all this other shenanigans, I think we would have gotten
I think I'm thankful that we weren't in a position coming into this race where those kind of storylines would be taking precedent over – you know, the race itself. So
good point.
All right. Next up, Charlie says they have the fact that the FIA directly influenced the result of the championship and the race. Since I guarantee if it wasn't the decider, that race would have finished under safety car. Yep. I think we kind of all agree on that one. Anyway, final fan email. Matt Polanski says, today's race is called, oh boy, this will take a while. Michael Massey is at it again, directing the race by the seat of his pants. This race had everything. Lap one controversy, Checo being used as a roadblock, Kimi not giving a shit, and Sainz prize. A Sainz prize is that thing where the podium cars line up at the end of the race and everyone forgets third place was a thing built on the back of a late Latifi safety car. Max got his first F1 World Championship. Maybe, who knows? This may not be decided until the lights go out in Bahrain next season.
I'd say Polanski finished strong there.
Yeah.
That was probably the best one.
Yeah, I mean, he's... Yeah,
somebody challenged him last week, and he just decided to bring the pain. And
for 22 races, he's just been throwing it down. And I feel like he's definitely hit his mojo the last handful of races. It's just been just a whole nother level of a brilliant, hilarious.
He's only got 98 days off till the next one.
Yep, put, sir. Well put.
Start working now, Matt.
All right, so that's it for the fan email. So now we move into the weekly awards. And for that, we always start off with the rubbish. And I think I'm going to start with John here. Who do you got? As if I don't have any idea.
Yeah, in case you had any shocks based on my soap opera or soapbox earlier, I'm going to give this to Michael Massey for the 8th time this year.
No surprise there. Andy, who do you got?
Yeah, I hate talking about refereeing. I hate having episodes where we have to talk about rule books and I'm flipping through things. And it's fun to research, but not when we want to be talking about sector times and gaps and great moves and counter moves and all that other stuff. So the FIA just let it run down their leg. And they were doing actually, I thought, a really good job until you didn't. And for that, you get my rubbish award for
this week. Andy, Deanna?
I'll make it 3 for 3. Michael Massey.
Vincenzo?
The FIA radio, just to switch it up.
Oh, I love the FIA radio. Which
we can compass all that together if you want.
FIA radio, I feel like, first of all, we barely heard it early on in the season. It got progressively, we heard it more and more as we went on. And I felt like we heard it a lot today, which adds to the drama and the confusion, people not knowing what's going on. It's great for folks that get it and understand the sport, but it's really difficult for newbies. I mean, I had so many people text me and were like, what does this mean? What's going on? I'm like, I don't fucking know, because like I'm trying to take it all in. It's a good thing and it's a bad thing. Today, I thought it was a little too much and it caused a lot more just of that clusterfuck. I mean, even at some points, I think Massey was like, hold on, like, I'm trying to figure it out. He basically said to Toto at one point, like, it was, I don't know. FIA radio.
Yeah, we had the same exact thing last week. Just people blowing up my phone, during the, and it's like, is he negotiating? And is this normal? That was the question I got a lot.
Well,
no.
Speaking of negotiating, not to go off, it was funny that Massey said he didn't have any power last week in the negotiating scenario, but then suddenly this week he's got the power to literally do whatever he wanted with the safety car based on the rule, the rule. Also fascinating.
This would be a great time to have a sound effect for that. But
well, basically, this is what it felt like.
Oh, it's not playing. Oh, dang it.
Oh, dang it. See,
board, look at this.
We need more donations. Gotta get better soundboard.
Yes.
The board is
my rubbish. A little bit of both, but a specific FIA radio message, and that being Toto Wolff begging and pleading, Michael, please don't. please don't. That was disgusting.
I was about to say that one, but I didn't want to be mean to John.
I got no problem with that.
James can take care of that for you. He's got that.
All right, so on to analysis paralysis. Andy, you take this one first.
I don't know how you don't just double up on the FIA here, because that is the spirit of analysis paralysis, not understanding the situation and being frozen by it. And there's certain people are made for pressure. Michael Massey just isn't. So, again, FIA, you let this thing run down. Run down your leg when you didn't need to. So analysis paralysis.
Deanna?
Yeah, I'm going to have to lean that way too.
All right. Vincenzo?
I am going to go with Mercedes tire strategy. I thought it was, I think in a perfect scenario without the issue on the, the safety car, it was odd that they didn't try to get Lewis back in the pits on faster tires or on different tires.
I was just going to disagree. I just think because track position is key. And he just clearly had the pace, even when Max was on 20 lap fresher tires kind of towards the end. I mean, granted, they were in traffic, well, but I don't think that, I think that was their best option. And,
yeah. I think, yes, he had the pace in that, you know, there was, even when like Lando had the puncture, there was potential, like, are these going to last 45 laps? Ideally, they would. I think Pirelli rated them at 50 laps, but I don't know. Like, I just thought it was interesting the way they did that.
He just never had a pit stop gap, though, to Verstappen. And then I don't think you want to risk an overtake on Verstappen versus hanging it out there.
You don't, but with the safety car, I thought he truly should have. I truly thought he should have.
Yeah, was the timing just off for him? Each one of those safety cars and virtual safety cars where he didn't have a chance
He never had the window.
He had a chance on maybe the VSC, but he opted not to. The actual safety
when the VSC was out, what was his gap?
It was like six or 7 seconds. He never had the gap.
Yeah.
Whether it be safety car, VSC.
I mean, if Max does what Lewis doesn't do, Max does overtake and starts in P1 in either scenario.
You needed a 14-second gap under the VSC of this track to maintain.
I have to watch it back. I thought it was high. I thought it was more than six. I thought it was at least 11. I thought it was at least 15.
Yeah, I thought it was actually closer. I could be wrong. There's so much going on. I thought it was closer. When the safety car came out, it was 11.
When the VSC came out, I think it was around like 7 or so-ish. 5 maybe in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did it get that low?
And he was,
Perez held him up.
17.
And then that brought that gap all the way back down. And then it widened out a bit. But then once that VSC came out, Hamilton stayed out and for something.
This seems like a year ago, this race. Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Okay.
I'll ride with the Michael Massey on analysis paralysis, and then I think we just have John left, right?
I mean, do you really even need to ask?
all right. So Dark Horse, Deanna, who you got first?
So I am going to go with Sergio Perez. Just for that defending against Hamilton. That was my absolute highlight of the race and not something I thought we were going to get at all. So just great, great stuff from him.
Andy, who do you got?
I'm giving this one to Yuki Tsunoda, P4, best result of his young career. Good to see that kid who's gone through a lot this year kind of start to come out of it on the other side. All the mentoring and stuff looks like it's paying off. He could have a really good year next year if AlphaTauri gets the car right.
Very good. John, Dark Horse?
So I think the definition of a Dark Horse is who has the most impact that we don't expect him to have most impact. So in the realm of that, you know, definition, I'm actually going to give this to Michael Massey again.
Oh, Jesus.
Lay it on.
Vincenzo, where do you got for Dark Horse?
Do we get the same action if this was the old track layout? So my dark horse, it might be the Abu Dhabi track itself.
There you go. Sneaker. Sure. For my dark horse, I'm going with Nicholas Latifi because he really turned the whole thing on its head at the end there. I was going
to
go with...
Guys, I'm new here. I don't know if it has to be a driver or not. No, I didn't know if it had to be a driver.
Good. I mean, John didn't use one. Okay.
Whatever you want.
I threw the rule books out of that one. So
I was going to go with Checo.
Taking a page what from Michael book? Massey. We're gonna make up rules as we go, in honor of the great Michael Massey.
I was gonna go with Checo, but that was only if nobody else gave him his shine, and D did a good job of that, so I'll stick with Latifi. All right, so for driver of the day, let's start with John. Who do you got for driver of the day?
So I'm gonna keep a similar theme here. Driver of the day. I'll change it to person of the day, the most influential person of the day, Michael Massey.
That's new. Deanna, what do you got?
I'm split between two. I mean, Carlos Sainz again, holding on for a podium. A quieter day, but then my second pick. Actually, I think my full pick is going to be Yuki Tsunoda. I mean, kind of staying away from the whole championship battle. We've talked about that enough. But Tsunoda, I think, to be qualified ahead of Gasly, end the race ahead of Gasly, got past Bottas on the start, got past Alonso at one point. Like, he was just kind of did a bunch of things and just... a performance that we haven't seen out of him that we really wanted to. And just, yeah, great stuff from him.
All right, Vincenzo, who you got?
Carlos Sainz.
Carlos Sainz it is. And Andy?
I'm going to give this one to Sergio Checo Perez for being the epitome of what Red Bull has wanted a second driver to be all weekend long, from the toe that then he then turned into a good qualifying lap, which is hard, hard to do. And not only that, but great teamwork today. Great battle with Lewis today. It kind of just sucks that his race ends on that weird retirement that I'm still not really sure why they did it.
It was because they were worried about reliability, so they didn't want Perez himself to cause a VSC on his own. So they pulled him in just to be safe.
Ah, okay.
Makes sense.
Well, again, for being the consummate teammate, Sergio Perez, my driver of the day.
All right, my driver of the day, I had a pretty tough time with this one. Carlos Sainz definitely was up there in my mind with the day he had. But I got to give it to Max. Max won the world championship today. And for that, he is my driver of the day. So now into a very fun section, the prediction results for this weekend. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've ever had a back-to-back six-point finisher. I took that honor to this week, so sorry to Deanna and Andy, but y'all are both done and dusted. Andy is in a very distant last place with only 2 points this weekend, one for a bonus pick, one for a prop bet. John, you're down there with him because I don't even know if you even made all your picks last time, but you did get one bonus pick, one prop bet. Deanna, Ben.
I did. I actually, to make sure there was no shenanigans, I actually screenshotted. I made my predictions at about 2 a.m. after we made our prediction, our preview episode, because you guys had me a little worried. I'm like, yeah, there's a possibility here that this might all change. So
I'm calling shenanigans.
I did throw them in there. Thankfully, it didn't matter. In the
there's no protest in the Outlap F1 podcast predictions. So sorry, it is over. Deanna, valiant effort today with a 5-point finish. One for qualifying time, two for the podium, one for fastest lap time, and one for prop bet. However, pale in comparison to my 6-point finish, one for the pole sitter, two for the podium, one for fastest lap driver, one for bonus pick, and one for prop bet. To bring the season final standings, Andy in last place with 50, Deanna with 53, myself with 54 in second place, and John with 58 to win it this year. Congratulations, sir.
So, this thing's been sitting in a box for about 5 months now, but I could finally unveil it. Thankfully, after spending my hard-earned money on it, I don't have to pay to ship it somewhere. But we have a trophy. We have the Outlast F1 podcast champion.
Is that going to be Stanley Cup-esque? Will that get passed around, winner to winner?
Part of her name's in it.
It depends. I don't know how much it costs. I don't know. We may not want to order another one, so it might.
All right, you got to take out the Sharpie and sign it now.
Yes. Oh, that's a good point, Andy. Thank you. Just in case it gets passed around, I'll have to get a little shelf back there, at least for the next 12 months. I can hold on to the
congratulations, Jen.
So yeah, it's been sitting in a box, and
okay, you got the other thing you got to do, Jen. You got to add another star over your car, like the footballers.
That's European footballers. See, I like the way you think, buddy. Yep. I'm glad I got to stay here in good old Charlotte, North Carolina. For another 12 months.
Proud of you, John. So. All right, so that about wraps it up. We'll now go to final thoughts, and we will start off with our special guest, Vincenzo. Remind everybody where we can find you on all the social medias, and give us your lasting thoughts on the season and this final race.
At Vincenzo Landino on Twitter, that's the best place to find me talking about F1. Final thoughts on the season is that it was still one of the best seasons ever. And definitely one of the best in a long time. Hopefully we can see that next year. I think that it'll be interesting to see how the new cars and whatnot affect performance. I think that'll be the big story, at least early on. We'll see how drivers adapt. I think Carlos Sainz is going to adapt well, as he's proven time and time again. And I just hope that all of this kind of bullshit from this weekend goes away to give us a nice clean entry into next season at some point.
Agreed. Thank you again for joining. Deanna, your final thoughts?
Just great season all around. A lot of drama, but some really great racing, and Max and Lewis were just on a whole other level. And it was awesome to see them go at it, especially after the turbo hybrid era maybe hasn't been the most competitive. So just to get that out of nowhere in a season where we didn't think for a long time we were going to even have these regulations. So just to kind of make this happen in the final year, is great. And thank you for everyone listening and joining along with us on this journey.
Yes, big thank you to everyone out there. John, final thoughts?
If I had a pillow, I'd use it right now. I'm tired.
I thought you meant to scream into it.
I did that earlier. That's fine. I echo Deanna. It's the growth of this show has been just incredible this year. It's been obviously assisted by some on-track action. So going back to the entertainment value, but yeah, I mean, it's been phenomenal having Andy here, having Deanna here. You guys are incredible. And it's been a blessing to have you guys here, and look forward to many great things. 57 episodes.
Wow.
And we're not quite done yet.
Heinz ketchup-esque.
Yeah. So we're not that far away from 150, I think, all together. So
okay, I was going to lose Deanna on that reference.
I was waiting for her reaction.
At least one per episode.
See, priceless. Yeah. 57 episodes of that good stuff. So we appreciate you guys sticking around. It's been a hell of a season. It's going to be, we'll have a review episode, I'm sure, at least one, and a quick off season. And we'll be recording throughout all that, I'm sure, you know, keeping you busy. And we'll be doing it all over again in 45 days or something like that. So sounds like a plan.
Yeah. You mentioned the 57 episodes. I got a feeling we might breach 60. Before we close out this season, we will have, of course, a full season breakdown, giving out some grades, talking about the battles throughout the season. And I'm sure we'll have some off-season news to get into before turning the page on the new season. But eternally grateful to have each of you part of the Outlap team, and to meet you all in pretty random and crazy ways, thanks to the internet and also some of our great guests like Vincenzo. So it's been a great year. Awesome racing, awesome controversy, complete and utter chaos, which I just absolutely love, and hope we get a lot more of it. So thank you to all the fans out there listening, especially those of you who are donating and helping us make this a better show each and every week. And that's pretty much all I have. So Andy, your final thoughts, and then take us out, sir.
Yeah, I'm grateful to everybody on the show with me today. If you would have asked me 3 years ago, would I have ever considered doing something like this? The answer would have been, what are you smoking, and can I have some? But to find the three of you has just been this amazing, amazing thing. You guys have no idea what actually doing this actually means. The last few months for me personally, outside of the show, have just been incredibly rough. You guys know some of it. You don't know all of it. I'll explain it in due course. But to have everybody on and to do this every week is such an honor. To have people donating, I never thought that would ever happen. That somebody actually says, here, we want to give you money because we like what you do, is amazing. So this has just been an amazing journey. Vincenzo, it's great to meet you. And we're gonna get better. We're going to continue to refine this, and we're going to push it and go to the next level. I've always finished anything I've started. I've started on this, and I'm hooked, baby. So you're going to get rid of me when I'm probably pushing up daisies. But for that, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.